Hey, sexies.
I've still got some stuff in the toaster, but it'll be up in a second.
Okay, we'll wait till you're done, and we'll,
I'm still chewing on my meat.
That's what she said. Yeah, yeah.
No, LeVar, no!
And 3, 2, 1.
Standing, yeah, right on the foyer, on this dark day, right in plain view, oh yeah, of the whole ghetto, the
broadcasting live from an airship over a legal waters, it's America's Campaign yeah, Center, episode 321 of The Side Quest.
That was good. I like that. It was deep.
I'm Dally Domofsky, a.k.a. Cool Rats, one of your hosts, one of the Triforce. I'm going to be the Triforce of Courage. Joining me is the Triforce of Wisdom, Steven Strom.
Wizard powers. I don't know. You caught me off the guard there.
And the Triforce of Ganon, Eric.
The Triforce of Ganon?
So, because he's the Triforce of Power.
What part's illegal? The waters or?
Or the airspace.
The airspace.
Both, man. Both.
We are on the. Go with it. Are we on the airship, the Daedalus from Saints Row 3? Did we hijack the airship from Saints Row 3 is what I'm trying to get to.
we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Okay.
So.
How you guys doing?
I don't know. What's a good thing to say for the Triforce of Wisdom? I felt like I should be like the smart one there, but nothing.
Dude, if we were to actually apply the Triforce of Wisdom to the three of us, we would all lose.
Yeah, the Triforce of Wisdom would fucking seek another man without fear in this sector of the galaxy to go work for the Guardians of the Universe. It's Green Lantern, assholes.
Whatever. Oh, God. It's been a while since we recorded an episode, guys.
A regular ass episode.
Yeah, regular. We had a bunch of random battles, but we had
45 random battles in between.
Well, we had our little dual cast there, Christmas Eve.
Yeah,
and I've been podcasting with Justin Russo too.
That was you did one there,
but the Triforce of side questing has not come together in such a way with such power as we are now in quite some time.
Yes,
precisely.
Such thrust.
Such thrust.
Such meaty, wet thrust.
Surprisingly, we will get into a little bit of that later on as well.
Triforce of Wisdom, everybody.
Triforce of Wisdom. Triforce of Courage. And Eric's Triforce of Power Thrusting.
Watch out for that donkey punch, just like on Jeopardy.
That donkey punch. Well, let's jump right into... We actually have a really, really awesome hour plus of podcasting today.
And then we'll have another hour plus of random bullshit.
And then we'll have another hour plus of really shitty podcasting.
We cannot clarify what order you'll be getting it in, so you'll have to play along and find out.
Well, there is a good amount of shit to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about what we've been playing over the break, especially because a lot of us got games for the holidays. And so... we were able to, game the games, which is a good thing. And then we'll get into the best of 2011 side questings. Basically, our best games for the year. We did a big vote on the website, as every website is, I think, required by law to do at this point.
Mm-hmm. And they will be tased if they do not. I looked
it
up.
it's like a reverse SOPA.
It's actually part of SOPA, ironically enough. If that law comes to pass, if you do not do a Game of the Year podcast, you will be electrocuted by cops.
It's true. Most people don't know, but SOPA stands for Side Questing Our Pirate Asses. So
bringing in that Triforce of Wisdom right here, kids. Dropping knowledge on you,
guys. I'm gonna hang up.
No, worry, I'm let's get into a little bit about what we've been playing. And, oh, first of all, Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, happy halfway through January New Year.
fuck you, and fuck you.
Happy January 17th, Dally.
Happy January 17th. What have you been playing, Eric?
A few things. I got for Christmas from my brother, Dirt 3 and Forza 4.
Good man.
Lots of racing to be had. Haven't even...
Well, you do have a family of racists, so that's
yep, yep. I have yet to crack open Forza 4.
Yeah, I see it's not on your list of games that you played.
Yeah, it's... Well, for racing games, I've put, like, 28 hours into Dirt 3.
Wow.
Holy cow.
How did you maintain that much patience with Dirt 3?
I did that.
Triforce of power, man. That's how
Triforce of endurance.
About 20 of those hours came in about 4 days.
Wow.
Dirt 3 is an excellent game.
I actually got a download voucher for it with a graphics card I bought over the break, but I have not.
You should just use that so you don't let it run out, because I've done that with about 10 video cards and the free games that come with them. So, just a
pro tip. Yeah, I probably should do that.
What are you playing it on, Eric?
360.
Okay.
It's probably the best looking game on the 360.
Really?
Wow, bold.
I never played Dirt 2 except for on PC. And Dirt 1, though, it still looks good on 360. Because I played it up until Dirt 3 came out, just about. And Dirt 3, I put it in, and I can't think of anything that looks better.
I don't know. Battlefield 3?
No.
The high texture?
Battlefield 3... Battlefield 3 kind of looks like ass.
Final Fantasy 11 Online. No.
Okay. I thought you were like saying that was what you had played. I thought we were going down a dark corner here.
Very dark.
No, racing games though, they are kind of always pushing the forefront of like what looks good, because you don't have to really do a lot of like crazy background environments and stuff like that. You can just focus down on those car models.
And Dirt 3 is it's insanity between the particle effects and the snow. Driving through the snow in cockpit view, like, I'm almost going to buy a wheel and a whole kit for this game.
I do like me some good snow effects.
Because the snow in this game, between it kicking up and just sometimes when there's snow falling, it looks incredible. And then there's nighttime snow races.
Ooh, like, that actually...
God.
I don't even like racing, but actually now that you're just... nighttime snow racing.
That sounds pretty damn cool.
Because Dirt is like kind of... It's like rally racing, right? Or something like that?
Yeah, it's... there's... In they split it off in Dirt 2. They had more than just rally races. It's still... You know...
But it's a lot of sloshing through, like, detritus and shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of particle effects.
The only thing new they really added, I think, in Dirt 3 is the Gymkhana, which is, you know, like, Ken Block racing, you know, driving around pylons and whatnot.
I always think Gymkhana sounds awesome, because I always think it sounds like a white dude with a mustache who leads, like, a taekwondo practice in the mall.
And the
what's
Gymkhana?
Gymkhana.
You guys, I'm going to quit. For how bad it is, I've put a lot of time into it. And
it is bad, though?
Oh,
really?
It's the worst. Even with all the assists off, okay, like, one of the things is to do a donut around, like, a pylon. And you hit the gas, and, like, all of a sudden your car will just, like, you can just hold left all the way, and it'll just start making you go in a circle around it. And if you know anything about cars, you know if you hold left, no matter what you're doing, trying to go in a circle, you won't do a full donut. You'll crash into the goddamn pylon. This doesn't happen. They just magically make you go around. Probably because it would be impossible to do in a video game with thumbsticks. But that's really the only complaint I have about that game.
You know, one of the cool things there that the Dirt series, I guess, brings to the streets, brings to the table, is you already have a lot of games that are, they try to be like simulation racing games, like Forza and Gran Turismo, even like the Need for Speed games to some extent. They're still trying to get
every other year.
They're still trying to get the vehicles to be like real vehicles, the kind of drive, like, even though it's a whole different idea. And you get rally racing in Dirt 3 and like other games like Pure and that kind of stuff that that totally pushes the limit of, or the idea of racing. You know, it's a little bit more, I guess, I don't want to say kart racing like, but it's definitely a funner style of racing where it's more about
it's something that people don't know a lot about.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps with it. Dirt is by no means a sim,
mm-hmm.
and they can cut corners with it being not sim, you know, more arcadey, but people will still think that it's a sim because they don't really know much about it. Not to say that, you know, you're not going to be able to do a loop in Dirt 3 or anything. It still keeps to reality as much as possible. But they do a little bit of hand-holding.
Oh, I mean, it's rally racing is a little bit more unpredictable than track racing. And I think that's the point I was getting at. You drive Forza, and you can pretty much figure out exactly where you have to be to nail those turns correctly, so that even, like, the most experienced drivers on Forza will always make the same exact turn. And they'll hit the corners the exact same speed. The only difference is if someone's, you know, driving next to you or not. But I guess, you know, games like Dirt and other games of that sort are a little bit more unpredictable, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, I haven't had as much fun with a racing game in a while. Probably since Forza 3.
Cool. What else have you been playing?
A lot of Modern Warfare 3.
Okay.
My brother picked up a Call of Duty Elite subscription for me. So he's expecting me to put hours into that for 10 more months.
Sure.
I don't think that's going to happen, but Modern Warfare 3.
They're supposed to be supporting it.
Oh, it's the 24th, the first set of maps comes out. People can hate on the Modern Warfare games and Call of Duty games as much as they want, but those are well-made games.
Yeah, they are.
Anybody trying to say otherwise either hasn't played it, which is I've looked at my friends list, and the people who criticize it usually haven't played it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just really, they're fun. And when you're playing with people, it's even more fun.
Sure, sure.
So I've never gotten the criticisms. If they make it every year and you don't want to buy it every year, then don't. Is that that hard of a proposal?
Nope.
I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't play the games myself, so I can't really say much. But
sure. I mean, they got the formula down, don't they?
Yeah, and right now in the section, the console cycle we're running in, who isn't working off of a formula?
Right, exactly.
Speaking of that, did you hear Gary Oldman on Conan O'Brien doing the Reznov
Yes.
Shows?
Yeah.
That
was pretty great.
He's amazing.
Get to the cover!
Down! But, you know, so, like, I'm looking through Steven's mega list of games that we'll bring up later, and, you know, there's only a couple here that aren't formulaic.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a different complaint for a different podcast, maybe, but, you know.
See, I'm looking at my mega list and I'm thinking, tank!
but trying to say, you know, Modern Warfare is a bad game because it's formulaic is, and then bringing up Battlefield or, you know, anything in its place is kind of laughable. Mm-hmm. But anyways, Call of Duty Elite.
How's Elite? Yeah.
Elite is, okay, you know, obviously it makes its money on the free DLC, quote-unquote free, that you're going to be getting. So I can't really speak to that yet, but they have three video services planned.
That weird, what is it, who the Arrested Development guys are doing that weird.
Jason Bateman and anyways, the other one I can't find her now.
The other guy, Joe.
No, it's somebody else.
Okay, let's just assume that it's Gary Oldman.
But they right now the videos they have up, they have Roll Call, which is pretty much behind the scenes of the development of the game and of Elite. So they're talking to the Beachhead guys, which if you're interested in video games, they're fun to watch. And then they have Friday Night Fights, which is a horribly scripted MLG-style competition between two sides. Like, they did Boston versus New York. Mm-hmm. So you have tools from both cities yelling at each other. And it's the worst.
Well, first of all, anybody from Boston or New York is a tool. We already know that.
You know we're going either to Boston.
Oh, later. Shit. And Ryan is from New York and Chicago. He's got the worst of the bunch.
He's not from New York City, though.
He is? Ryan Gann?
No, he's from... He's not from there. I won't say it on the podcast because he might not want everybody to know. But
I was assumed he was from New Mexico, but then was born and raised in Japan, where he learned to become a fighting swordsman / gunman.
A fighting swordsman / gunman that uses a yo-yo as a secondary weapon.
Yes.
And slices bullets in half before they can reach him. And when the bullets slice in half, they fly off in two different directions behind him and hit his other enemies.
But anyways, Elite.
Yeah, fucking Ryan Gann.
You guys, okay.
Samurai gunman.
Right, Ryan Gann, samurai man. With a yo-yo and a gun in his hand. Ryan Gann.
I was like 2 seconds away from booting you.
Sorry.
But Call of Duty Elite, if the maps are good, buy it.
Yeah, but that's the weird thing, like, right, is because we won't know until...
Yeah, you're...
That's the weird thing about all these season
passes.
Yeah,
once again, you're buying a promise.
That's why I haven't bought the Saints Row pass or the Gears 3 pass yet, either.
Yeah.
You look at the Uncharted 3 season pass they just announced today, the DLC. It's like, all right, Uncharted 3 season pass, multiplayer maps, and character skins. Well, hold on. Nobody fucking plays multiplayer Uncharted
3. Well, a lot of people do, actually, but...
Yeah. It's probably one of the most popular PS3...
Oh.
Well, that's like being the least retarded show pony, though.
That's like being the tallest dwarf. Sorry, Warwick Davis. I still watch your show. Warwick Davis got a TV show with Ricky Gervais.
Merchant.
Both of
is it
you.
Merchant or merchant?
Merchant.
Even merchant.
Really? But it's spelled merchant.
Yeah, but they're.
This is like a Ralph Fiennes thing.
Yeah. What? Ralph Fiennes.
No, but. Like, some people call him, like, Rafe. Some people call him Rafe, but I figure if it was good enough for his mother to call him Ralph, I'll call him Ralph.
It's true. They call him Ray Fiennes as well, don't they?
Yeah. From now on, I'm just going to refer to Stephen Merchant as Wheatley, so it doesn't make any difference.
Exactly. By the way, he was on Conan last night and just killed it. He's Wheatley's voice. He didn't bring up Wheatley at all, but...
Oh, really?
Well, I was really hoping that he would say, yeah, well, you know, congratulations, Stephen, you guys just won side questings. Well, we'll get to that later on.
Spoiler.
Gonna have to beep that. But anyways, I've been playing some... XBLA games.
Okay. Like?
Such as Apples to Apples and Blitz.
Wait, there's an Apples to Apples XBLA game?
You did not know this?
This is the second Apples to Apples XBLA game.
Reals?
No, they had, like, Ticket to Ride, but they didn't have Apples to Apples.
There was another Apples to Apples
on XBLA?
Is it still? I thought they pulled it.
I'm pretty sure there was an Apples to Apples game before.
I'm pretty sure there wasn't.
It was not as it was a different thing. I don't know if it was on XBLA, but there was a downloadable Apples to Apples game.
Not maybe,
before.
But I don't think it was on. But Apples
anyway,
to Apples,
yeah.
The single player is interesting.
Does it have a good story?
Absolutely. You have to.
All of the apples have been stolen by Bowser right now.
And he's going to marry
this
Princess
is the
Apple.
Wrong castle. The apple's somewhere else.
Yeah, the apple's somewhere else. Let me give you this pair.
Sorry, you fruit fucker. The apples are another castle.
Yeah, fruit fucker. Yeah, if you go to the wrong castle, the fruit fucker 9000 comes out and fucks you in the eye. Oh, this is terrible.
So yeah, apples to apples.
How do you play apples to apples single player?
It's really strange. It's like you have a time limit counting down, and it's like a word search where you have to not only match the closest card like you would normally, but you have to word search it out of a 5x5 grid.
And for those who don't know, apples to apples is like a real life card kind of.
If you don't know what apples to apples is, you probably don't have any real friends.
Yeah, probably. No, you've never known the true meaning of fun. And, and no one can hug you because of your horrible, horrible fungal growth.
Yeah, your breath probably smells like you just pulled it off of an asshole.
From all those riding apples.
From all those riding it's not really a board game. It's like, it's in the vein of Uno in that it is like a party game that you play with cards kind of thing, but it is nothing like Uno.
Yeah.
There's nothing like Uno. You're like, it's kind of like Uno if you had machete.
It's like Uno because
it has
cards.
And in place of cards, you use like bumblebees.
Yeah, sure.
it's great. A card game that you
play. Well, I'm trying to say it's a card game, but it's not like Magic the Gathering or some shit. Is what I'm trying to get.
It's not even really a card game. It's just. I guess
I like Magic.
What is it if not a card game?
Well, you could classify it. I mean, those could be printed out on a sheet of paper.
Okay.
Okay.
You know
so
what?
Each.
You can say that about anything.
Each apple has a defense number and an attack number, and some of them have special abilities in Trample and Shroud. flying cards can attack any card they want, but can't be attacked by non-flying cards, except
right.
if they have reach.
Now, the different apples are, there's green apples, red apples, granny apples, Fuji apples.
Right, and some colors work better together with other ones than others, but you have to have the right number of colored seed cards to tap to use each card's abilities.
And fucking organics.
I hate organics. They can't be... black apples, rotten apples, will not affect them at all.
Like, racist.
Yeah, I know, right? This game... I think we just cracked the apples-to-apples code that it's all been racist this whole time. Somebody shoot me in the head.
But yeah... If you have friends, buy apples to apples. And even
if you
want to
make
friends, buy Blitz, because that is a fantastic game.
Yeah, now I want to hear about this, because...
Okay, so the inverse, the absolute inverse of apples to apples, if you know what Blitz is, you probably don't have friends.
Maybe.
I'm just kidding. Blitz is good. I just don't like football.
Blitz is as faithful to the original without absolutely remaking the original.
So this isn't Blitz the League. This is NFL Blitz.
This is NFL Blitz made by EA.
Yes.
And it's...
So it's an arcade-y game.
Yeah, it's...
it's in the vein of like NBA
We
Jam.
Really can't have to explain Blitz, do we?
No. It's like NBA Jam, but with football, right?
That's the comparison you'd make, and
that's as simple as it'll go.
They need to make a new NBA Jam game. It's been forever.
Yeah, like
it's been like
3 months.
I mean, a good. Oh, okay. A real NBA Jam game.
A real NBA Jam game. Not a. Oops, we fucked up NBA Elite 2 years in a row.
So let's. big head mode. They just re-released like NBA 2K7 with big heads.
That's really better than NBA Elite, that's for sure.
This is it, isn't it, guys? No, NBA or NBA Blitz. NFL.
I'd play that game.
Just a bunch of football players like storm a basketball court and just start smashing through.
Well, they made that Dennis Rodman NHL Hits game.
They did. Do you guys remember Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball for the Super NES?
Dude, that was
one of the best worst games of all time. There was fucking cyborg basketball players along with Bill Laimbeer.
It was ridiculous.
Hey guys, do you remember Shaq Fu? Because Shaquille O'Neal does, and he still doesn't know why we didn't like it.
Game of the year 2011 is Shaq Fu. Confirmed.
I always have this like
2011 game of 1994.
I was talking
I
to my brother.
Idea.
Oh really?
No, that'd be great. Let's go. Let's do like 17 years back we'll do Game of the Year 17 years ago where we'll all vote on,
holy
like...
Holy crap, it was 1994. How bad is my life that I know when Shaq Fu was released?
Side questing's Game of the Year 2011 for 1994 is...
Oh, God.
I like... Yeah.
It's just the Giant Bombs, like, 2000X game of 2000X minus 1, but, like, we've said, fuck that. Multiply it by 17 years.
I had that game for the Amiga.
Sega Genesis. Well, wait, the Amiga?
Yeah.
That took a second to sink in. Sorry.
I think it was a 4000.
No. I just
4000 Amigas.
I just imagine that, like, Shaq has a copy of Shaq Fu sitting on his shelf somewhere, and that was the last game he ever bought or was even salient of its existence. Because I always have this image in my head, like, Michael, of the two, like, guys who've kind of become commercial, like, and literal, like, TV ad commercial
Chaos
guys.
Chaos in a Windy City featuring Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Space Jam, the game. No, of those two guys who kind of...
Excellent movie, though.
those guys who do the commercials of the two football, or the football, basketball guys. You've got Michael Jordan doing the Hanes, and you've got... Shaq doing Icy Hot, and I always, like, they always have those two looks on their faces. Like, Michael Jordan always has the look on his face, like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm doing this. And then Shaq,
like,
always has that look on it. Sorry, go
like
ahead.
Shit his pants, basically.
Yeah, like he shit his pants, and he knows he shit his pants, but the thing, out of money to keep shitting his pants once every day at the 4:35 time slot. And then Shaq is just there because he doesn't know that they're filming him. It's just like completely oblivious to whatever's going on. Like that's my image of like what Shaq would look like when Shaq Fu came out and nobody liked it. 1994 game of 2011.
It's like we took the best, which is the best of Street Fighter, which is the best of Mortal Kombat, and we threw those away and made Shaq Fu.
Oh fuck!
What else? Anything else you've been playing, Eric?
Other than Shaq Fu for the Amiga.
I still have an Amiga and an Apple IIe floating around here.
Of course you do.
I should bust those out, record some video.
Oh yeah, that'd be amazing.
That would be good.
I played some Bejeweled 2.
Really?
Okay.
Do we have to talk about Bejeweled
2? If you want to, I don't. I played Super Meat Boy for PC.
Okay.
With a gamepad or with a keyboard?
Gamepad, of course.
Okay.
Good. I would never torture
myself
like that.
I tried playing it with a keyboard. Sorry, kids.
Minecraft I played.
That's good.
Enderman
still giving you trouble?
Man, those things freak me the fuck out.
I still haven't played Minecraft.
And Trials 2 I played.
Is it
for PC?
Wait, Trials 2? That's a thing?
Yeah, it came out like 5 years ago, dude.
Oh, really? I don't keep up on anything. No, I keep on not on Trials really, I guess. I don't know.
But yeah, that's it.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, good. So well, Call of Duty Elite works. Apples to apples is fun.
Call of Duty. Okay. Now that you brought up Call of Duty Elite again, apparently a lot of people have been having trouble with the web interface. And even more people, myself included, just today the Android app came out for that, and they just straight ported it from iOS, and they forgot to include like the other hardware button functionality.
So it's like you load up the app and it says to go to the Apple home screen and buy from the Apple App Store, click here.
Like,
it's got
it,
like an Apple symbol with an X through it.
It may as well, because the only button that works for hardware is the home button.
Oh man.
It's pathetic.
So it's the same.
It's like when Ninja Gaiden Sigma came out and they had the on the PS3 and they still had the Xbox logo.
exactly.
In the game.
Or does it fuck.
This is fuck. It sure is.
That fuck. Capcom game sucked a lot of donkey balls.
You're gonna have to put way more.
Lost Planet. When they released the PC version, it had just 360.
Oh yeah. just straight up 360 buttons in the game. Yeah.
Yeah. That's always fun.
Japan doesn't like BC.
But yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
Okay. Proceed.
Cool. Cool. Well, I'll get into what I'm playing because Steven has a bajillion long list.
Bajillion right. long.
Bajillion long. So, I've been doing the 3DS quite a bit.
What?
Doing the 3DS dance quite a bit. Because
oh,
obviously, yeah.
I heard I've been doing the 3DS quite a bit.
I have.
Is that where you, the 3DS dance, is that where you shuffle your feet, and shake your, rattle stick and then pray to the gods of, gaming that they will give you capacitive touchscreens?
Cause. Kind of, yeah.
I don't see the need for a capacitive touchscreen.
3DS Pro, that's probably what'll come up.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so
there's more money on their consoles.
3DS XL, XXL.
3DS XXL. 3DS Triple XL. That would be, I would buy that.
Brought to you by Vin Diesel, starring the movie Triple X.
Vin Diesel. That would be great, though. 3DS, like, just XXXL, which is just like 3D penises. It's just nonstop.
So it's Swap Note.
So it's Swap Note, which is what I was going to get into. So what I've been using a lot on my 3DS is Swap Note, and I've got to say, when you have all guys, I have two women that are my 3DS friends.
That you never send
like
40, anything to?
Yeah, that I never send anything to. But like 40 dudes, I've never seen so many like 3D penises shooting.
It goes like this. I draw an elegant 3D penis, and Daly responds with an elegant 3D penis splooging on the screen in 3D.
I just kind of had this image in my head of like Daly, turning on the 3DS, and there's like a circle with a dot in the center, and he's like, "What the fuck is this?" And he kind of tilts it to the side, and just like a holographic penis. It was like a penis seen from Straight On. So.
Dude, he's done that to me.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, Steven. Have you downloaded Swap Note yet?
No, I have not. I don't really use my 3DS much.
Just download it.
It's made me use my 3DS.
Exactly. Because you'll see the stupid little notification pop up, and you'll say, I wonder what this is. Ah, it's a penis!
But it's always funny, and it's always fun to draw a reply.
Does it just become like the Rose of Jericho, the game, where you try to, like, make the, like, most hidden penis you possibly can to see how long it takes somebody else to realize it's a penis?
The only thing I can complain about is the limited amount of drawing you can do.
Yeah, there's only two layers you can do, and the lines are actually on the thicker side, so you can't actually.
Of course they are.
Yeah, and
so on a scale, this would be Asian to white. You can't go any higher than white. You can't go into African American at all.
Racist.
That's like the seventh or eighth racist thing Steven said today. Like,
that black people have big penises.
Okay, so yeah.
What would LeVar Burton say to that?
LeVar Burton.
Or Fish Facunda.
Oh Jesus Christ! So 3D.
I'm sorry, penises. I love you. I love you, LeVar Burton. I really do.
No, that's something I haven't drawn. I have not drawn a Geordi LaForge penis, but now I'm going to.
Is it just a dick with a Geordi LaForge visor on it?
Yes.
Take a look. It's in a book. Oh, my God!
You had it in your book!
You cut a hole in the spine when you opened it up.
Why are the pages stuck together?
Why would you do this to me, Geordi?
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Don't let me go another laughing fit, because you know what happens to me. So anyways, yeah, the Swap Note is actually...
Phasers to Flaccid.
Oh, God. Oh, I almost passed out.
So, here's a couple cool things you can do with the Swap Note. You can set Nintendo. Why do they do this? You can send messages in two ways. You can send it through SpotPass, which is just over the web. So I'll send a message to Eric. He'll send it back to me. Or you can send a message through StreetPass. And what that basically does is it lets you set a message on that you create, you sketch up, and anytime you pass somebody and they have Swap Note, they'll download that message from you, so they're going to get an awesome surprise when they get a 3D penis shooting at them, some completely random stranger, or kid, which is even better. So,
do you get many street passes?
You know what? I get them, but only from the kiosks at Target and Best Buy.
Oh. See, I still, my 3DS still has its Street Pass virginity.
Oh, really?
Because I got it just after E3, so.
Oh, I got over 100 Street Passes at E3, because everybody there had theirs. But any gaming, any kind of convention.
Yeah, I'm bringing it to PAX East for sure.
Yeah, take it to PAX for sure. You'll fill that bitch up. But,
with Jordy, no!
Oh my god!
Can you imagine? And you have to sign it too, so everyone knows who they got from.
No, this is what we'll do for PAX East. We'll do like just the most vulgar, grotesque 3D penis on like because you can do four slides. On like the first slide, just vulgar, grotesque 3D penis, and the next slide will say visit side questing for all your gaming needs.
Oh, no, I was gonna say like a penis with side questing written along the shaft.
There you go. It's a penis with side questing list. That's it. We're totally gonna do that.
Oh, we gotta shut this podcast down right now.
Okay. Anyway, so that's 3D Dicks, aka Swap Note. I've also been playing VVVVVVV on the 3DS, which is really good. I hadn't played the game the first time around.
You had or you hadn't?
I had not.
Okay. I've already played it to completion, so I don't know if I want to go back and play it again.
Well, so the cool thing about the 3DS is the control scheme now is that you can use the slider pad, which works really well for the game. And then the because the controls are super simple. But then the 3D, the way they do the 3D is it's just in like two layers. So the background layer is just the stars like streaming past the.
So it's
the
like parallax scrolling. And
yeah,
the-
it is. To like the nth degree, it works actually works really well, and it's for like a game that's designed to look like a shitty Commodore 64 game. It looks really cool with that 3D effect.
That sounds like the parallax scrolling thing in 3D. That sounds like
that's
right.
That's what a few games have been doing. Like,
Mighty Switch Force did that. Bit Trip Saga did that.
That seems like something BitTrip would do, yeah.
Yeah, and it actually looks really good, because it's one of those things where the 3D is a really nice touch. It doesn't affect the game at all, but it's visually it works really well. So, yeah, that's really cool. It's a really fun game. It's like, what, about a two-hour game, I'd say?
Really, it's that short.
Yeah.
It's about that short.
They designed it for like $5,000.
Yeah. Like, oh. If that.
No, I don't have a problem with it being short. I just kind of, for some reason, I just assumed that it was really, really hard. So I assumed
it can be. It's like they kind of designed it like a classic game.
If you want to get everything in the game, there's parts which are so ridiculously difficult they'll make like Super Meat Boy seem easy by comparison. You know, because it keeps track of how many deaths you have in this game, and I'm at a. The average amount of deaths is like around 200 deaths per person, per playthrough. I'm at about 600 deaths right now because I'm trying to get this one, artifact that's totally not necessary to get in the game. But
yeah, it's Metroidvania-y, isn't it? Or am I thinking?
It is kind of, yeah, definitely. Okay. Really cool, really fun game, awesome. I totally recommend it.
I just love the music too.
The music is great.
I own it on PC, but do you think it's worth getting?
You've probably gotten in like 8 indie game bundles, haven't you?
I have indeed. do you think it's worth getting on 3DS just for the 3D effect?
Yeah, I think so.
If you haven't played it yet, I'd get it there.
Yeah, Eric, if you said you're going to try to download it,
I just picked it up. I haven't played it yet, but
it's really good. It's definitely a cool visual effect. And then the other, I did a lot of 3D gaming, I guess. The other thing I did was played and completed Uncharted in 3D, all the way through in 3D.
Really? Okay, that's impressive.
So, there are some scenes in Uncharted 3, or I'm going to call it Uncharted 3D, that are really well done. So, let me phrase it better. The game succeeds and fails at 3D on these two aspects. The first aspect where it succeeds is the sections that it was completely designed to be played in 3D.
Which is few, isn't it? Because it seems like they kind of went after that late in the cycle.
No. There's the one section, I think you're in Syria, where you're climbing up the side of the tower, and they're kind of aiming down the tower with laser scopes.
Yeah.
And those scopes, those red lights are just pointed right at the screen, and it's coming right at me, man. It looked really cool. And there were other since.
Go ahead. I was just gonna say, I'd imagine it'd be like anything, where it's like sometimes the 3D is just more like subtle than other times, where it's just right in your face.
Yeah. I mean, the other part where the 3D works really well is the desert, because it just really emphasizes the vastness of that, you know, the almost the loneliness of the situation with that 3D. So that works really well. Yeah.
How's the boat stuff?
The what?
The boat scene.
The oil rig or the cruise ship?
The cruise ship.
The cruise ship was pretty cool in 3D. I don't think it didn't live up to the full potential that I thought it would.
Because everything's flipping upside down and flying out of, you know, water's shooting at you out of pipes and shit, I would imagine.
Yeah,
it
didn't hurt my eyes by any means or anything, but I almost didn't notice it as much as I thought I was going to. Like, the areas that it really does shine are kind of the big set piece areas. Like, there was one portion of the ship where I thought it did a really good job, and then there was one of the scenes on the oil rig or the graveyard. I'm sorry, the ship graveyard where it was really cool. But so that's where it does a good job. Where it does a bad job, where it's just where you almost don't notice it because there's so much going on the screen, and you kind of want the 3D to be, you know, at the top of the hierarchy of the set design, of the scene design, with everything else kind of fitting within it. Because there's like portions of Mario 3D Land which do that. They'll they'll make like a 3D puzzle, or they'll make it so that you're looking over an edge and staring down into an abyss of 3D.
That situation, they know everyone has 3D.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have it always with Uncharted, so I guess that's where that's where the fails are of trying to play it in 3D, is that it doesn't, you know, the effect isn't as powerful there. But there are parts of it which really made the game really interesting to play. And I, if you have a 3D TV, by all means, and a PS3, by all means, pick up Uncharted, because it's just to experience that in 3D is
so really do you good. Actually like the game, or?
I did like it a lot.
Enjoyable?
Very enjoyable. I think once you get past those first couple areas where they're
the first seven chapters.
Yeah, I guess you could kind of say it's the first seven chapters. Yeah, because what it's doing is it's almost like reintroducing all the characters for no specific reason. Reintroducing a lot of the characters because like you lose.
It does kind of fall into that weird. It falls into that weird kind of thing where it's like they're very strangely kind of trying to pretend that a lot of the stuff in 2 didn't happen, or at least that it got kind of that between 2 and 3 some weird shit happened that kind of like retconned what happened in 2, and then at the same time they very clearly got a lot of shit that you wouldn't get at all unless you played Uncharted 2.
I think the
I think that really hampers it.
You know, for me the story was what wasn't as good for me. The action scene, every scene was like an entire game by itself. It was really well done. But the storyline and the characters, it's like, oh, we got Chloe for the first like 5 or 6 chapters, and then she disappears. She's
they
never really
dump her along with Cutter.
Yeah, and
then
right.
Cutter, like, the Cutter is probably the best new character of 2011, and then they dumped him.
Well, Wheatley is, I would take that. But anyways, regardless, they do. They dump Cutter. The really nice thing about Uncharted 2 is that the characters were there throughout the entire thing. And in Uncharted 3, you're kind of picking up and losing characters along the way, which it just kind of breaks up the storyline a little bit too much. You know, you'll have
it feels disrespectful.
It does.
It feels disrespectful to those characters.
Yes,
know?
Totally agree. Because I think Chloe is an awesome character, and in Uncharted 2, she was really well portrayed as this. You know, she was. You know, the whole time
succubus.
The whole time she's on Drake's side, and
you're thinking of Catherine. different name.
But in Uncharted 3, it's like, oh well, she's a good guy, and she's just gonna, you know, she's gonna drive the van.
They take her for granted.
Yeah, they and it's like you're ruining the.
and that was totally not who Chloe was in Uncharted 2. She was not the character where I'm going to leave you halfway through the game because it's too dangerous for me.
Yeah, Chloe in Uncharted 2, Chloe was a dangerous character to be around because you could, if you're around, you're probably
going to. She's a femme fatale.
Yeah, totally. Not in Uncharted 3. And then they kind of shoehorn in what's the blonde girl? Drake's love interest.
Elena.
Emily?
Yeah,
Elena.
No, Elena.
They shoehorn her in.
Shoehorn.
Whatever. They
for the rest of the podcast, Steve Strum will be playing the part of Dalibor Dombrowski.
No, so they kind of stick her in there for no reason. And you miss this whole part where after Uncharted 1, they're mad they're madly in love and then they break up. And in Uncharted 2, they catch up to each other, they're madly in love, and then they break up sometime between.
Apparently, they break up again.
It's like okay,
apparently they got divorced or some shit,
or they weren't married, or
they were on their way to be married.
And then in Uncharted 3,
it's really vague.
Love again, and then at the very end, chances are they'll probably. The breakup.
In Uncharted 4.
Or a Golden Abyss or whatever. So,
Golden Abyss is a prequel.
I think that's where that's where my issue with the story, with the game was that.
The more I talk about this game, the more I don't like it as much.
No, I like it. I actually, kind of forget about the characters.
I've just never been more disappointed.
It becomes a really good action game. It's definitely not a five-star game.
Can we say it's maybe like the Return of the Jedi of the Uncharted?
No, because Return of the Jedi was amazing.
No, well, but compared to Empire Strikes Back, you got Ewoks and...
No, because this game isn't amazing. It's just serviceable.
What I'm trying to say is you've got the first game, which is great, and everybody loves it. You've got the second game, it's like, oh, everybody loves this even more. And then you've got the third one, and it's just kind of like... Well, it's great. It's good, but it's not. It doesn't live up to the potential of the second one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Return of the Jedi is my favorite Star Wars movie. I'll just leave it at that.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Well, it's not maybe a perfect analogy, but I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I do. Yeah, but
it's no Empire Strikes Back.
If there's one game to make a case for, we need a new set of intellectual properties. It's Uncharted 3.
Yeah, or at least
I would say there's a lot of games that come forth before Uncharted, but
no, because I don't have as high hopes for most other studios' games than I do for Naughty Dog.
Okay, and, well, that's fair. I mean, we know they have the talent to pull off something incredible like Uncharted 2. So it's not unfair to expect them to be incredible, to continue to be admirable, like straight out of fucking Star Trek. Like, we only need you. All we need from you is to continue to perform admirably.
Yeah, and besides that being one of the nerdiest things said on this podcast, like, they don't need to be as good as they were in Uncharted 2. Which, by the way, Uncharted 2 still needed some work, but.
It's still one of the best games of this generation.
Yes, exactly. And I thought they were going to improve but in some aspects they made the game worse than what it was.
I definitely agree with that. I'd say in some ways they did make it worse. In some ways they also made it better.
Yeah.
But things that I liked about Uncharted 2 that got worse in Uncharted 3, I don't care about as much as the things that they made better in Uncharted 3 as opposed to Uncharted 2.
Yeah, that's where I kind of agree with
this you. I'm trying to think of an apt analogy, but it's...
That's right.
I've never really encountered a situation as I did with this game.
Well, you know what? Let me scoot through my last couple games here, and then we'll get onto Steven's ginormous list
that he's
and then we'll do our
all through
that we're all gonna fall asleep during too. so then I've also been playing Dragon Quest VI for the DS, but on my 3DS. So I'm a huge sucker for classic JRPGs in the Dragon Quest series. This is awesome. That's all you need to know. It's just a classic JRPG. But the cool thing is. What's that?
First Dragon Quest game I ever played, Dragon Quest VIII.
Really?
It to get the Final Fantasy.
He's like 14 years old.
That's true. I was around when Dragon Warrior and shit came out. I just never played.
Dragon Quest VIII came out in like 2007, didn't it?
No, it came out in
Dragon Quest
VIII, I think,
PS2 era.
Yes, PS2 era.
Tail end. Yeah, what took him so long to make that next game?
It was before Final Fantasy XII because it came with a Final Fantasy XII demo, and that's why I rented it. And then found out that Dragon Quest VIII was also amazing. So
yeah, it was.
So it's like Crackdown and Halo.
Crackdown,
3.
Exactly.
I bought this game for the Halo 3 beta, but hey, it's pretty good itself.
Yeah, so Dragon Quest VI. Dragon Quest VI, really well done. Really fun game. Keeps that classic JRPG.
Is it a remake or a re-release?
It's like, a remake, complete remake of the SNES game, like which never came to the US. Dragon Quest V and VI never came to the US, so they completely remade them. They remade 4, 5, and 6.
They never came to the US, but they were in English.
They were already done in English, correct. They actually had already translated them.
Why do they do that? I'm not going to get in. That is definitely something I don't want to get in.
Yeah. But anyways, really good if you got a DS. And Best Buy has it for like $14. You can't go wrong. I think it's like $14.50. It's just a great one of those great little RPG games that you can play. And you know exactly how the story is going to advance, but the mechanics are good. So.
Okay, so you want to know what I've been playing?
Yeah.
You want to know what I've been playing?
Do it.
You don't want to know what I've been playing.
You're right. Okay.
I'll tell you.
Okay, can you
tell us? I'll tell you what I've been
playing. Tell us.
Fine. Okay. Here is what I've been playing this week. I'm just going to go through this list once, and then I will tell you which of these games I have beaten. So, over the break, I've played Killzone 3, Trine, Warhammer 40,000, Space Marine, Shadows of the Damned, Bastion, Serious Sam, HD, The First Encounter, Dark Souls, Halo 3, ODST, Assassin's Creed, Revelations, Saints Row the Third, Red Faction Armageddon, Atom Zombie Smasher, Jamestown, Rage, Iron Brigade, The Gunstringer, Star Wars The Old Republic, Greed Corp, Defense Grid The Awakening, Fable 3, The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, No More Heroes 2, Desperate Struggle, The Witcher 2 Assassins of Kings, Infinity Blade 2, Orcs Must Die, Deus Ex Human Revolution The Missing Link, Metroid Fusion, Super Mario 3D Land, Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet, and Battlefield 3.
Okay, you mentioned, you said Witcher 2 Assassins of Kings, but you said Assassins of Creed, like Assassin's Creed.
I played both of them.
Band Creed, that would be awesome. Assassin's Creed would be a great game.
Hell yeah! Oh! it's a Yarling simulator for the first half.
Yarling.
Of those games, I've beaten Killzone 3, Trine, Space Marine, Shadows of the Damned, Bastion, Serious Sam HD, Dark Souls, Halo ODST, Assassin's Creed Revelations, Saints Row the Third, and Red Faction Armageddon. Those are the ones I've beaten.
How horrible is Red Faction Armageddon?
It's really horrible. I talked about it on
and
the.
You beat it?
Yeah, I did. I went on sort of like a backlog crusade, just kind of slicing through a bunch of things that I had beaten that I had bought over the years, and that was kind of. I thought it was going to be a lot shorter than it really was.
Over the years, the oldest game you mentioned was like a year and a half.
No, there's much older games on my list. I'm playing through the much newer game. Well, Serious Sam, I mean, I played the HD version, but Serious Sam came out in like 2000 or some shit. So
I was thinking of Serious Sam 3.
No, I've played
out
Serious
of all
Sam
those games. Besides Witcher 2, what was your favorite that you had the most fun with?
Oh God, I had a lot of Saints Row 3. Saints Row 3, Dark Souls. I beat Dark Souls again.
Well, Saints Row 3 was the best game of last year.
I won't talk about Saints Row 3 because that's gonna be we're gonna get to that on our game of the year list. Dark Souls, Shadows of the Damned, I had a lot of fun with those. Killzone 3 actually surprised me. I enjoyed Killzone 3 a lot more than I thought I was gonna. Bastion was pretty cool. Assassin's Creed Revelations I really thoroughly enjoyed. Anyone specifically want me to
really
talk about?
Revelations? Tell me a little bit about one of the things I'm seeing is you went back to like No More Heroes 2, which was like from a couple years ago. Fable 3 was from a couple years ago.
Fable 3, okay.
I mean, Metroid Fusion was that from the 3DS Metroid Fusion or?
Yeah, that was through the Ambassador program. Okay. The original Metroid Fusion came out, I want to say, like 2003. It came out concurrently with Metroid Prime. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Not totally sure about when exactly it came out, but yeah, I got it with the Ambassador program. I'm pretty deep into that one too, but yeah, I mean, I can talk about any one of these, or I can talk about none of these, and we can just get to Game of the Year.
Well, like half of yours are on Game of the Year, basically.
A lot of them are. Well, Saints Row 3, and that's kind of it. Saints Row 3, yeah. And Richard 2, I guess.
Cool.
I beat Dark Souls. Here's what I'll do. I'll just give you like a little taste of all the games.
Yeah,
that
that'd be good.
So maybe like a paragraph long in each of them. Killzone 3, the ending was really dumb, but the controls in that game are crazy tight, and I had forgotten how tight they were, and I'm actually kind of intrigued to see what they do with Killzone 4. The original Trine, not Trine 2, I finally went back and played that. That's really fun. I don't know why I waited so long to play it. It's got a really neat...
You're probably waiting for that eventual XBLA release.
no.
Do you remember that debacle?
Yeah!
Worst.
Oh my god, yeah, the PS, and it came out on PSN eventually, yeah.
Yeah, 3 months later, when they said it was supposed to be a week.
I thought it was supposed to come out on PS3 first, originally.
I think you're probably right, yeah.
That was insane, that whole thing, everything about that was weird. But it is a great, that aside, it is a great game, and I was really, really angry at myself almost for letting it go for as long as I did without playing it. That switching between characters, three different characters with three different abilities, the mechanic is really neat. And the game is really pretty, too. Kind of a passé story, but, you know, whatever. It's not what you're coming to that game for. Shadows of the Damned, I finally pushed on past the dumb turret sequence and realized that game is probably one of my favorite games of this year, if not one of the best made games of this year. Johnson, if we did like a best new character of 2011 list, like we kind of almost mentioned earlier, Johnson would be, if not my number one, he would be in my top three. Johnson is an amazing character. And that last rap at the end of the credits that Johnson does at the end of that game is amazing. And I really like the ending of that game. I like both endings of that game because there's like three endings to that game.
That's
I like
one game that I'm definitely looking to get into.
You should play it.
It's short, too.
Yeah, it's short, and it's like the kind of game that almost...
8 hours, maybe?
If that. And it's the kind of game that begs to be played through again, too. And they kind of almost game that a little bit, because it doesn't have stacking achievements.
God, that pissed me off so bad.
And there's no new game plus, but even so, it's really fun, and it's the kind of game I see myself coming back to, like, 10 years from now, and just playing through it all the way again. Like sometimes I go back and play Chrono Trigger every couple of years, kind of thing. I played and beat Bastion.
So what you're saying is Shadows of the Damned is as good as Chrono Trigger? Put that down.
That's exactly what I'm saying. No, that's not what I'm saying exactly, but it is in that kind of thing where I feel like this will be a kind of classic game I come back and beat again and again and again for years to come. Bastion was really good. I liked the story in that game a lot, actually. A lot more than I thought it was going to, because I didn't think there was going to be much of a story to it. But the music is, I don't know what else I can say about
the
music.
Is this your first encounter with the game, or did you play it when it came out?
I had played it when it came out, and then I just restarted it and played it all the way through again. I did that with a couple of these games on this list, as I started playing them once, and then stopped and came back and just restarted the whole game from scratch. Bastion, I had some progress, and I just decided to restart the game in its entirety.
I'm going to have to do that, too, because I got about... I don't know, I probably put up three or four things in the Bastion. I don't know. I didn't get very far in, a couple hours at most. Yeah. But I just put it down, and I haven't gotten back to it.
Yeah, the story in that game actually really picks up. Really, at first it was kind of like, I thought that there wasn't going to be much of a story to it, but it gets really weirdly esoteric and shit like that, by the way it's told and whatnot, but... in a good way, where it's like you could almost make it, like, I can say that the story is artistic without being ironic about it, kind of way, if that makes sense. The choices you make at the ending are really cool, especially there's the second to last choice. You make a couple of weird sort of binary choices towards the end, and they're both really pretty cool, and the way the music weaves into that game is great. I really liked it. It's not one of my
favorite games ever, maybe just because I'm not a huge dungeon crawlery guy, I think. And it's not really a dungeon crawler, but it is. That is probably the closest thing I could come to describe it. But I really, really enjoyed it. And I think I want to go back to it and just kind of experience it again to maybe taste it a little bit better. Cool. I played Serious Sam HD, which is the first Serious Sam game in HD. You shoot lots of dudes with no heads that still scream and explode when they touch you. Game freaked me out a little bit.
it's a Serious Sam game?
It is a Serious Sam game in HD. It's fun. I had never played them before. I bought them during the Steam sale, but I had never played it. It was a really good palate cleanser on some of these games I'd played, some of these really weird esoteric things. It's just really dumb shooting, like rocket launcher. You hit 8 to use the rocket launcher, kind of shit like that. Finally beat Dark Souls. I brought myself up to 100 hours in that game before I was only at 72 hours. The end boss of that game is actually really a pushover. I was really surprised. It's to the point where, because it was Dark Souls, I kept expecting there to be like a second form to the boss. You killed him, but now he turns into a dragon. What?
Thought you were going to get a boss rush ActRaiser style?
Yeah, exactly. I thought I'm going to kill him, and then they'll play a cutscene, and I'll turn around, and every boss from the entire game will be there fighting me at the same time, or this boss will turn into a dragon, or he'll turn into a giant mouth, and I gotta kill him, or he'll eat me in one hit, or something like that. And that, no, totally didn't happen like that. It was just a kind of a normal-ass boss fight, and that game is really good. That was number 2 on my Game of the Year list this year, and nobody else voted for it. I almost immediately picked it up, and New Game Plus did, too. So that, and as far as, like I was saying about Shadows of the Damned, Dark Souls, like, I will come back to that game probably, unless they come out with like a third kind of game in that Souls kind of series or whatever you want to call that. Of course they're going to, but unless it's like way, way better or something like that, like Super Mario 3 to Super Mario 2 or something like that, this will be a game that I just keep coming back to probably every few years throughout the rest of my life, just because it'll be the thing where, oh, you jump here to hit the invisible block to open the mushroom, to get the one-up mushroom, and it's got so much stuff like that. I just feel like that is the sort of thing I will come back to it for. It goes a lot faster once you've already beaten it once. Like, it's, like, crazy fast.
Cool.
Finally went back and played ODST, Halo 3 ODST.
So which camp are you in? Are you in the it's great or it's terrible camp? Because those seem to be the only two camps that exist.
I'm in neither camp. I don't think it's the best campaign of Halo. I think Halo Reach is the best campaign. I'm a huge Firefly fan, so I liked hearing and seeing the entire cast of Firefly do the voices in that game. But other than that, it does some neat things towards the end with the where the story goes in some places I wasn't expecting it to, and I was surprised at that. Especially at the very, very end, it does some really neat things that kind of it delves deeper into the fiction of Halo than any Halo game before that one had done, even more so than Reach in a little bit of a way. Because most of the fiction of Halo is told through the books and the comics and shit like that. This almost feels like it was the story of one of the books or the comics, but told in a Halo game.
I got the audiobooks for the whole series of Halo books, by the way.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Who voices them? I want to know that.
I don't know. It can't be as good as Jim Dale doing Harry Potter, though, so.
Next, I played Assassin's Creed Revelations. I really liked Assassin's Creed Revelations. Did not care too much for the ending, because it's kind of a non-ending. I don't want to spoil it.
Yo, Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. I like where that game goes in a lot of ways. I like old man Ezio a lot, too. I think his hair looks awesome. I like a lot of the shit that they add to that game, like the hook blade and the bombs, and I actually started making much more use of bombs later on in the game. Without spoiling it, the story of that game is you trying to find something very specific, and then at the end of that game, you find out that, because in Revelations, Desmond is trapped inside of the Animus, Neuromancer style, and he's looking for this thing, And then at the end of the game, it plays a cutscene where you find out that that thing he's been trying to find a location sitting next to him on a table the whole time. So great. But it does show way more of the crazy ass, like, first civilization stuff that Assassin's Creed, like, that you find out about in Assassin's Creed 2, which, I mean, fuck, spoilers, but that game came out a long time ago, guys. But yeah, I mean, you see that shit. Like, you see how, I mean, okay, spoilers for Revelations here. Well, maybe not, because Eric.
No, don't do that. I haven't played it yet.
Yeah, okay.
That game's like 2 months old.
Yeah, it's not very old. So,
almost
but
to
you,
the day.
You do see a lot more of the crazy, overarching sci-fi shit of Assassin's Creed towards the end of that game. I won't get into specifics on what you see, but you see some crazy shit. Like, yeah. Then there's Saints Row 3 was the other one, and we're going to talk about that on Game of the Year. And then Red Faction Armageddon, which I talked about on the on the JPEG podcast, which it's not good. Don't play it. I don't want you to play it. Don't hurt me like this by
what
playing.
What game is that?
Red Faction Armageddon. Armageddon.
That's that.
It's basically Red Faction Guerrilla minus all the stuff that made Red Faction Guerrilla fun and with the dumbest ending ever. It's like, what the hell is that?
Is that right. It?
That's you, Eric.
Oh, I said, is that it? Are you done,
yeah,
Steven?
Yeah, that sounded like
Steve.
There's more games that I've played, but those are the ones I've beaten.
You guys can hear me, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I said, is that it?
Yeah, I just said.
Okay.
There's a bunch more games on here, but those are the ones I've beat.
So you want to take a break?
Yes.
Well, let's take a real quick break, guys.
Okay.
And before we get into the Game of the Year talk here, we've already killed about an hour. Yeah, we'll talk about the year.
Out.
Yeah, you dropped that and made it a whole lot weirder.
Thanks.
Okay. Oh my god, the Candyman killed Dally.
I am eating M&Ms. Alright, we'll be right back after these messages.
Wow.
Wonderful little break. We've cleared our throats, gotten the 3D dicks out of our minds, and now
you're
mouth.
Mouth.
No, yeah. This is crazy.
We have certainly taken our 3D dicks out of our mouths.
Certainly. Each other's mouths.
How long until they come out with the sunglasses that are 3D for real life? Like, they have those HD glasses. You can see everything in high definition.
I almost thought, okay, when you said 3D, I almost thought you meant, like, where the outside of the glasses, you know how some are occluded so that you can look out of the glasses but the others can't see in?
Yeah.
I had the image of like 3D images on the outside, so you have a 3D penis on each of your glasses lenses, so you have dick eyes.
You have dick eyes. Put that one in the notes. You know what's not dick eyes? Is the incredible year of gaming that 2011 ended up being.
2011 was insane.
Every
Holy crap.
Month had was just full of awesome releases. Like, it was incredible. It really was.
Except for August.
You know what? August had Madden.
Deus Ex.
Deus Ex. And El Shaddai.
Right. It did.
El Shaddai. Get out of here with that El Shaddai.
Yeah, like, July and August were pretty lousy. But other than that, it was an awesome year.
Whatever, Deus Ex is on this top 10 list, so July couldn't have been that, or August couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, but Skyrim's on this list too.
Speaking of which, we did have, again, like we mentioned before, we put together our best of 2000 and it was 11. And
Questing's best of 2011.
I liked it. That was good. So the way that we graded it, so that everybody's clear, the way we graded it, and I think it worked out really well last year, we did again this year, is you picked your top 10 games. Games 10 through 6 got 1 point each, and then games 5 through 1 got 2, 4, 6, 8, and then number 1 got 10 points. What this basically does is it makes your top 5 games your most important games. And then usually games 6 through 10 you really liked, but...
It's like your best of the rest.
Yeah, it's kind of like your best of the rest. They're a little bit more interchangeable. They are, you know, I mean, you could have really liked Deus Ex, but you don't know if you liked it more than Shadows of the Damned or not. You like them both pretty in different ways. So, you know, at least this allows all these to be added up. And in the end, when we add up all the points, those do end up mattering quite a bit. Those.
Yeah, and it really makes you think about your top 5 games, like which really is most important, weighing it this way.
It's not a perfect system, because if it was a perfect system, Witcher 2 would be number 1 on this list.
But I think
you guys would all
three of us voted for it.
Yeah. I am the sole reason it is even on this list.
Very true. Because
I made a kamikaze run on my number 1. So.
So I mean, an interesting thing to have to do later on would almost to have taken maybe our top 20 or any, you know, any games that got the double digit votes and re-voted on those to see what would ended up, because I think the list would have ended up being a little bit different. Our final 10, but
I was just gonna say, I almost hope that becomes a thing where I put my number 1 on there, like how Ludwig on Joystick has his lucky number 7. I almost wish I have like a hope that next year I just becomes the Magic 8 Ball. Steve's Magic 8 Ball is the 8th game on the list every year. That'll be just some game that nobody loves but me, and then it'll just wind up on the list every year. I would be okay with that.
I think I'm actually okay with every game I ended up on the list. There were
7 different games got a number 1 vote.
Yeah, 7 different games got number 1 vote. 53 different games were voted on.
It was a crazy, like, variety.
We would have had more with a few of the guys ended up not submitting their votes. So Lewis, Mike, Taylor, you guys lost.
Y'all lose. You know, I when I put together the list of games to think about, I think there's 81 games on it.
So, yeah, I had a similar list. I can't remember how many are on it, but it is. Yeah, it was long. It was longer than like list of games I played over the break.
It's nuts. It really was an awesome year, and you know, I didn't get a chance to play nearly as many of these games as I would have wanted to. I mean, we were comparing the games we played in the top 10, and Steven, you played all the games in the top 10. And
I think I'm the only one on staff who played all of the top 10 games.
And Eric and I,
I played technically 7, but 6 for real.
I played 5, 5 of the games, kind of 6 in the top 10. So
actually beat most of the top 10 now that I look at it.
Okay, all right.
Huh.
Well, let's dive into the top 10, and coming in at number 10 was what you kind of you mentioned as, was this your game?
I spoiled it.
And it was Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Yeah, Deus Ex Human Revolution, the third in the Deus Ex games. It's a prequel to the original Deus Ex, cyberpunk thing by Eidos Montreal.
This is the second game in the series.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that, actually. it may as well be the second game in the series. Well,
let me hop on Wikipedia and check. Oh!
No, actually, I think it's important that we mention that this is the third game in the series because of the fact that you would expect, with the sort of, like, fucking Geordi LaForge flaccid dick that Deus Ex Invisible War was, like, you would almost, it was almost to the point where we didn't know that Deus Ex Human Revolution could recapture that magic.
I expected absolutely nothing out of this game, and I still don't know what to expect out of it, because this is the game that almost drove me to throwing my PC out the window, but I'm looking forward to playing it, especially after seeing it on our list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very good. It was high up on my list. I think it was number 4, maybe. It's really good. It's a worthy successor to the original Deus Ex. I wouldn't say it's as good as the original Deus Ex, but it is very good. I was kind of noticing earlier this year, I think I made the comment on an earlier episode, that if cyberpunk is kind of the new thing, the new pushback against modern military first-person shooters, and that kind of becomes the new fad, I am totally okay with that. And I think Deus Ex really captures a lot of what makes the cyberpunk world great. If you're fans of Neuromancer or Neil Stephenson's books, specifically Snow Crash, that sort of thing, just cyberpunk in general, it captures that world really, really well. And the game itself plays so well just because there's so many options to go through everything. It's a hallmark of the series, and it wraps it all in a shell that works really well. It has a surprisingly great story. I don't exactly like what some of the things that happen towards the very end of that game. I think there's a kind of a plot twist that kind of really kind of nags at me, but the way it's all resolved and how you make the choices at the end and how you make the choices throughout the game and how those choices affect how that game like works throughout the rest of the game, just how your gameplay experience can be changed depending on what on the choices you make, not only for your character but within the world, I think are a real achievement. And you know, the boss fights notwithstanding, the game actually played pretty well on top of that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's
an awesome. Yeah. It's just a
number
a really
9.
Wait.
Well, you're gonna keep talking about this?
Just really quickly. I haven't played it, but everything I've seen visually looks like it's visually designed really well.
Black and gold.
Black and gold,
that was,
baby.
That was their big
black
thing.
Black and yellow.
Good God.
Is that racist?
Next.
I'm not sure.
Number 9 is one of my favorite games of the year, even though I didn't vote on it.
Eric and I share a broner over this game, over Shadows of the Damned.
Which is a fitting word, which is Shadows of the Damned. Excellent game. I had some frame rate issues on 360, but other than that, no complaints.
No problems on PS3!
Which, and yeah, I played it through first time on PS3, and it was excellent.
Oh, yes.
It's
okay.
It's Suda51, right?
Grasshopper Manufacturer, Suda51,
Shinji Mikami, and
Akira Yamaoka.
Akira Yamaoka, yes.
Not his best score in history, I think
is my favorite Yamaoka soundtrack.
Really? Okay.
It's mostly preference of, I like Spanish guitar, so.
Oh, okay. Well, and I was going to say, it's still Yamaoka, and Yamaoka is, he's gold, no matter what he's doing, but yeah, I guess if that's more just your thing. It definitely fits with the world really well. Got a great sound. It's got a great soundtrack regardless. It's funny, too.
Comedy in video games is nearly impossible to pull off, and you know there's like 3 games on this list this year that have great comedy, and Shadows of the Damned is one of them.
Shadows of the Damned is very much one of them. We were talking earlier, some of the greatest new characters in history. Not only Johnson's great, but Garcia fucking Hotspur is kind of great in his own way.
Oh, yeah, he's like, very much when they're reading the storybooks together, it's
yeah,
gold, solid gold.
When Johnson's like totally deadpan, like it's story time, little child kind of way of reading it, and then then Garcia tries to read too, and he's like sort of like a half retarded, like, has to sound out the words to everything, and Johnson adopts this weird sort of like father son kind of thing, is like sound it out and all that shit as Garcia works through the really long words, only to realize that the really long word he just said is really dirty, and then like taking like 15 seconds to just laugh about the fact that he just said a really dirty word. it's so funny,
The story is a little bit cliche, you know, expected, you know, girl goes to, and gets pulled into hell, you have to go chase her down,
but the visual design
of hell, and like every area looks, it carries a theme, but it looks different,
and it's like the Donnie Darko version of Las Vegas at night, of the Las Vegas Strip at night, yeah, sometimes. Sure. And then, but then it changes to like the Army of Darkness, like Cabin in the Woods shit, and like even with very blatant Army of Darkness like references and pulls and shit like that.
And you know what? For as funny and as obtuse as this game can be, it still had some creepy moments to it.
Mm-hmm. Too. Much like Army of Darkness and the Evil Dead movies, it had some moments in there where it was legitimately unnerving. Specifically. Pretty much any of the weird-ass ways in which you're, like, in which your girlfriend dies, or is, like, eaten and spit out on top of you, or she goes crazy and tries to fucking chase you and eat you.
It's a messed-up game. Everyone should play it.
Yeah, it is messed up. It is great. And the most playable of Grasshopper Manufacturer's games ever made. Grasshopper Manufacturer and Suda51. Have great weird games like this, but they've never been totally as easily and accessibly played as this one. So.
Okay, number 8, Steven.
The Witcher 2, Assassin's Kings.
Is this your game of the year?
I think we're the only two who even played it.
I think we're the only two who played it in the world. it actually sold pretty well. And it's gotten its out there. Yeah, it's really good. It was my number one game of the year. I could do an entire podcast about how much I love it, but I will try to keep it succinct here. Eric, I want to hear your thoughts on it, Eric. I haven't really heard you talk too much about it previously.
I like it. sorry, I'm typing something out right now.
It is. Oh, sorry, Dally, go ahead.
No, it's coming to Xbox later this year for people.
Coming to Xbox later this year, yeah.
Which is what will really get it. Because the only thing holding it, what held it back this year from being on more Game of the Year lists is more people didn't play it. Because of its demanding, you know, PC requirements and, you know, just the number of people that have PCs to begin with for playing games on is pretty low.
Right. And but the trade-off with that is it is, in my opinion, the best-looking game of this year. Maybe not the most realistic, necessarily, but like just the art design, plus how realistic it looks and shit like that. From a technical end, when you blend technical and artistic together in this game, in my opinion, it is the best-looking game of this year.
Oh, I absolutely agree. This was my number 6 game, so it still only got 1 point, but it was my first best of the rest. Yeah.
It's really hard to quantify what is great about The Witcher 2.
It's just the RPG-ness of it. In a year where we got, you know, Skyrim, where it's still an RPG, but is still more watered down. Witcher 2 is an RPG-ass RPG.
Yeah, it's classic RPG, yep.
This is, it's RPG in the sense that, like, Dungeons & Dragons is an RPG. Not Dungeons & Dragons, Daggerdale, or Dungeons & Dragons, Planescape Torment. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons-ass Dungeons & Dragons, like, pen and paper shit. But it's presented in such a way where it's not...
That's what the A in AD&D stands for.
Ass. Ass. No.
But it goes deep and makes these kind of weird choice. You make these choices about you and your character that change the very fundamentally the way that game flows and plays.
Just the depth of the combat and how you are just thrown into it. You know, right off the bat. I played before the revision. I don't know when
revision
you played
it. Revision has changed it, so it's much easier.
Yeah, so it's more of a, you know, slow roll in, I guess. I haven't played it since then. But I just remember, like, for the first 3 hours, I hadn't played the first Witcher beyond about an hour. So I had no idea what was going on. I thought that if I had played The Witcher, I would have gotten, like, some idea, but apparently that isn't the case either.
It helps, but not nearly enough where you would, like, go in and just be able to crush everything in your path. It is pretty fundamentally different than the original. Hi, everybody. We had a bit of a power outage there, so we're back now, and I was just talking, according to Dally, I had just said the word arrhythmic, so I'll just start right back on where I started there. The Witcher 2, the combat, it feels almost arrhythmic. It's like, it's not like we're in like a Ninja Gaiden where you want to, I very specifically want to hit this guy 3 times, then dodge away because I know he'll do that swinging attack where he now he can shoot fire at me, and now I want to be blocking or I want to be dodging, and then I dodge roll back in and I want to attack. No, it's like this character, this monster or whatever has attacked me, and now I have, depending on what happens next, I have to very dynamically choose whether I want to block or cast a spell or dodge out of the way or just keep attacking kamikaze or use a bomb or use a trap. And you have to make all these decisions on the fly rather than like having these preconceived notions of how the fight should go. The fight determines how the fight should go and not just and not your own strategy. And it's very weird like that, but it's really fun. Cool. To kind of, It makes everything that you do in not only in the story but in the combat feel like it has weight and purpose, and I think that's a great thing about games these days, just in general. But
and I don't know if you mentioned or not, but it works really well with a controller. So when it comes out on 360, huh?
I was just gonna ask if you used it on a 360 controller then.
I just part of the time just see how it would work, and it works great. So like when it comes to 360, people are gonna be able to play it with only a graphical drop, pretty much.
Hmm. Yeah, and it still looks good from what I've seen from the 360 screens and shit. It looks like the game on like middle range settings, and which, for how good this game looks on the lowest settings, still pretty damn.
It's phenomenal. The way it scales is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. And I think the best thing about the game overall is kind of like not only the story but how the story. I feel weird to keep saying this over and over, but it's how it's presented. It's like The Witcher 2, more than any game I've seen, certainly this year, but maybe just in general, is so much. It's just really maturely presented. It's not like there's nudity and shit in the game, but it's not like presented like whoops, your boob fell out, you know, kind of.
It's not Saints Row 3.
It's not Saints Row 3 in that regard. It is very. It's all tastefully done. It's like the game knows that you are an adult.
As tasteful as it can be done. Because to be honest, it still doesn't need to be in there. But
it's tackling a thing that not a lot of video games do, and when video games do it, are pretty not tasteful about it, like much more so than The Witcher 2. And it handles it much better than I think most games do, and it's like the game knows that you are an adult, and it treats you like an adult, in not only in the story but also in the way the game plays. And I think that's a real accomplishment on the behalf of the game. And maybe that's just a thing because it's a Polish game. Maybe that's just part of its Eastern Europeanness. But it's something I would like to see in more games. Even something like Mass Effect. I don't feel like Mass Effect really. That whole BioWare thing of everybody has sex in their underwear is, you know, kind of thing is like, oh, well, okay. You know. Yeah. But cool. Yeah, I love that game. It's great. It was my number one game of the year.
And number 7 is the Batman. Arkham
City. No place for a hero. This ain't no place for a metal man. That's the trailer song for Batman Arkham City.
Did you play Arkham City?
I completed that sumbitch.
Did you?
Oh yeah, probably the week it came out. I'm inside baseball. I just had a power flash, and my whole computer's semi locking up right now because I opened up everything all at once.
Ooh. I mentioned.
Oh, did you?
Continue.
Would you like them Batmans?
You like them Batmans?
Batman, I played Arkham Asylum about 6 months after the game came out, and probably I think I started in January. I got it from Gamefly, and by March I had purchased it because I'd already kept it for like 4 months. So I played Arkham Asylum about 6 months after it came out, and I didn't get it as much as everyone else, you know, because I remember everyone talking about how it was one of the best games ever made, and I didn't get that, but playing this one, you know, with the zeitgeist, it was a great game.
It's a great Batman game, and it is just a great game. Like,
yeah, Batman game.
Yeah. That in and of itself is an achievement, but it's maybe blunted a little bit from the fact that we already knew that could happen with Arkham Asylum. But I feel like the combat in this game is the best sprawling combat.
And it was
already pretty good in Arkham City.
Adding in all of the combos with your gadgets, you know, with just different button presses. A simple little thing like that made the game 100% more enjoyable from a combat perspective. Between that and people have knocked the open worldness of it, saying there's much to do. But I mainlined the story from the start, and I had all the missions left over at the end, all the side quests and all the Riddler trophies. I ended up collecting about 140, 160 Riddler trophies, which some of them were fun. Too many of them were like, you know, throw batarang at, you know, like the question marks.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, like my favorite mission in the game were the memory problems.
Okay.
Like,
I can pick up and talk.
All of the side quests were my favorite part of the game. In the end,
side quests in that game are great.
Yeah, like
there aren't a lot of them, but they're all handcrafted as shit. For the most part,
they're like a Elder Scrolls or Fallout side quest where they actually put meaningful content to do on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
meaty, you know.
Yeah, and you know, just the only one I could take issue with is the Bane side quest, because that was really fucking dumb.
Yeah, it was weird. It was fetch questy and whatnot, and I don't quite like the way they handled the ending of that either. But then, you know, every game, no game is 100% you know, great in every single regard, and that is such a small part of that game.
And you know, the story was it was a comic book story.
I would say it was very good.
Story.
Yeah, it was a well done comic book story.
I'm not saying comic book story as a pejorative. It's just, you know, it felt like something I would read in a comic book.
Which is,
you're going into a DC game, you want at least that. But
you might say that's a genre, superhero
like
comic.
The interaction between the Joker and Batman and Batman, Hugo Strange, it reminded me of the cartoon from 1994 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was brought to life in a way that comic books usually aren't, even in movies.
I would say the one thing I like about the story and the characters especially is, and I think it kind of fits in with what you're saying a little bit, is it is faithful as hell. To, like, every kind of comic book character has a sort of, like, a wrinkle to them, or one or two wrinkles that kind of really defines who they are, and then you kind of spread out from there as to what that wrinkle means for what they will do in any given situation. And I felt like this game provided ample opportunity to see them put in a bunch of different situations, all interacting with each other, and at no point did they, like, not see, did no villain or hero feel like they weren't staying true to themselves, like, to that character and to that wrinkle about them. Like, you know, the Joker is insane, but in this very specific way.
Nolan North as Penguin is probably, like, the voice acting of the year to me. He played the character so well that... It's probably my favorite Penguin outside of comics.
Penguin is a tough character to get right, sure.
But yes.
I think he is handled well as the Penguin. He is the Penguin as the Penguin should be, which is a more violent version of the Penguin from the 1960s Batman.
another thing they got right is the violence. And Batman is some gritty ass shit.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Books, they are gritty ass shit. People think of them as kids' stories, and that worked against Batman with the whole quote unquote bitch fiasco.
I want to say for those who don't read comics, in Detective Comics right now, in the current run on Detective Comics, which is a Batman story, it is about a killer who cuts off people's faces and it's. Nails them to walls and stitches them to other people so that they look like these other people. This is kind of a spoiler for anybody who hasn't read Detective Comics number one, but it is the first. I mean, it came out like 6 months ago. In the first issue, the Joker gets his face cut off and nailed to a wall, and you see it dripping blood down onto the place. And then that is modern day Batman, kids. Like, it is not fucking Adam West's Batman anymore. I'd point that out.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not a bird sitting in a tree with a machine gun, as Robin said in Adam West Batman. But it's like,
yeah.
Batman is hardcore, and that's a public service announcement from us for everyone who needs to know that, because clearly you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had somebody come into my work a little while ago and. To ask me if this was okay to give their if it was okay to give this Batman comic to their kid, and it was like this 8-year-old kid, and I was like, fuck no.
Dude, please, like, you just ruined that kid's Christmas or something, because I was reading that when I was 8.
Yeah, but when you were 8, they weren't nailing people's faces to the wall.
That's true.
But like, it has gotten much stranger. I mean, the Joker says the word fangasmic at one point in that fucking comic. I'm not gonna lie to this lady into her face and have her come back and bitch me out about it, you know, when she sees Joker's face nailed to a wall.
Okay, so that was Batman: Arkham City.
Yes,
fantastic game. As the rest of the games, you should buy this.
What I just want to ask you one thing about Arkham City, Arkham City, quick. What did you think of Dally?
Yeah,
cover yours. what did you think of Clayface and the Clayface fight?
I thought it was absolutely—it was like they bring him in out of nowhere. Like it was a contrived moment to sum up the way the Joker situation is handled, and then the way he falls into the other area. I'm trying to be discreet about this in case people haven't played it.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's going to tie into the next Batman game that was hinted at in the side quest.
Arkham World, baby.
Or something.
Yeah.
Because...
In the thing with Azrael?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I personally really liked it just because, like, Clayface's motive, the way he like comes up and he's like, why? And Batman's just like, why the hell are you even here? And Clayface is just like, it was the role of a lifetime.
Yeah, like it was
to
like
me, that just feels so Clayface.
It was okay, but I just felt they contrived it just to fit the. They didn't know how to get the point A to point B, so they just slapped this in here.
But I mean, to be fair, like within that universe, it sure it's contrived, but like with it still fits within that universe. It's not like they just made It's not even like they made up something new. They used something that already exists. Yeah, okay, this isn't the
that's
Batman.
Actually something that's already been done.
Sure.
So I mean, it's not cool. Next, new. It's just
next.
Yeah. So number six. Anybody?
Yeah,
have enough
number six is
to...
The Legend of Zelda: Skyward Sword. Which was the, I guess it's the final song, the final dance for the Wii.
The Swan song.
More than likely unless Nintendo drops some type of other game.
Rhythm Heaven.
Which is weird, because ironically, it is apparently the first in the Zelda continuity, too.
Yes, it is. Now... did you guys see that whole giant Zelda timeline thing that was released?
You mean the three timelines?
I didn't
you know
see
what?
It, but
it's
all that I've heard 100 people talking about it, so I know just about everything about it without ever having laid I1 on it.
It's so weird. It's a totally contrived backpedaling timeline by Nintendo.
It makes sense in like. If you had to come up with a way of fitting all these games together, that makes sense. Yeah. It's where they make that three-way split that, like, okay, I can see the two of them, but one of the timeline splits on that is dependent on the idea that something happened that never actually happened. Like, it's dependent on that Link died at the end of Ocarina of Time.
Yep.
Which we know doesn't happen because we beat Ocarina of Time when we were kids. Like, we know that we died fighting Ganon, but we also died fighting Octoroks. So, like, is there a timeline for every time Link died against an Octorok, you know?
So what, Skyward Sword is supposed to be the very first Zelda game, right? In the entire continuum, it's the first one. And then it eventually leads into Ocarina of Time, which separates into these three separate timelines. Now... I'm playing this game, and I haven't completed it, but I do really enjoy Skyward Sword. I stated it before, and I haven't played it since then, but because I've been tied up. But still, just a really well designed, phenomenal game. But and we had talked about it before is that Nintendo made this too long, and it's not that. Too long is a bad thing because, again, some games it's fine to have a really long experience. They did it in this case for all the wrong reasons. They just wanted to make the biggest, baddest Zelda ever, which I think the majority of people out there will tell you that's great for a standard RPG. For a Zelda game, you just want a Zelda game to be
fun,
to be fun and to be the best Zelda game ever.
You want it to be a Zelda ass Zelda game?
Exactly.
I just want to be absolutely clear that I don't think this game should be on this list, so don't expect any support for this.
I haven't played it yet, but it as insane as that timeline sounds, like hearing the thought that you can play the quote-unquote original story sounds really interesting to me, especially as like a huge Zelda fan.
Yeah.
But on the other end, like hearing this game is, like, in some cases, I've heard people say, like, 8 hours too long.
It's probably more probably more like 15 hours too long.
Oh, God. Yeah. See, like, something like that. Like, I kind of expect it in a Zelda game. And I know when I'm playing it, I wouldn't care. But getting into it is going to be hard for me to do.
It's very strange because we got, like... Like, on my list, I had The Witcher 2 and Dark Souls, which both drop you right into the fucking action.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Zelda, which takes about, like, 5 or 6 hours before you get to the good stuff, which apparently I have not done yet, because I am bored to tears with what I've been playing so far. But it just babies you. Like, okay, I know how to hit the A button. Now here's a tutorial that teaches you how to use the A button. And now go talk to this guy to progress the story forward. By the way, he'll tell you how to use the A button and what that does. Now go do this quest for this guy that tells you how to do the A button. And now you're done with that. Now go do the same thing to teach you how to use the B button for the next 5 hours until you get to
it's
a fucking
giant tutorial. Yeah. And it's like, I think what happened is there's that, there's that, I think it's a YouTube video where it shows what Mario would look, what Super Mario Brothers would look like if it was designed today. And it's essentially Mario runs across the screen and then his big thing comes up and says, press A to jump. And then Mario jumps. And it says, press B to collect the mushroom or whatever. And it kind of takes you step by step along the way of a stupid...
You know what the game is? The game is – every character in this game is – it's like, okay, Navi is not in this game. You know, the annoying-ass little fairy that tells you how to do everything.
Everyone
in Zelda
knows who Navi is.
Well, I don't know. There's children out there somewhere, I assume. But Navi's really annoying, right? So they don't have Navi in this game. Instead, they've made every single other character in this game Navi but yeah. For everything that you specifically have to do. Like, it's, instead of giving you a Navi that follows you around everywhere, they've just built the world around you to be Navi. Like they understood people didn't like Navi, so they got rid of it, but didn't understand why people didn't like Navi. And then built the game into that.
So what's happened with the Zelda games up until now is they've really gone away from those first... two of those first three Zelda games. I still argue that the original Zelda and Link to the Past and then Ocarina of Time are the three best Zelda games, and maybe the three of the best games on the planet ever, because they were very pure. The fetch quests were completely optional, and they were, you know, to the point where they were actually kind of fun because they were novel at the time. These are... These fetch quests are not novel. They're not fun. They're very repetitive. And there's a lot of things in the Zelda games that has become repetitive. Like, the two worst Zelda games, Spirit Tracks and Phantom Hourglass, was all about going back to the same place over and over and over again without really enjoying it. And so I think Skyward Sword falls into that a little bit. And I think what they really need to do is just fucking reboot Zelda from the ground up and say, you know what, everything we told you up until now, just forget about it. We're starting from the very beginning again. You know that very first Zelda game you played on the NES? That was the first Zelda.
Ganon stole some red matter and blew up Romulus, and now the Vulcan homeworld is gone.
Exactly. I think they need to get back to that original thing that made Zelda great, which was the exploration and, you know, finding...
fun.
The only place a Zelda timeline belongs is on some forum where they also have Zelda slash fiction.
It's very true also. Now, again, back to this game.
So there you have it, everybody.
Yeah.
So there you have it, everybody. Game of the year number 6.
I will say...
one of the best 10 of the year.
It's still a phenomenally designed game. And it's still, to me, you know... And there are a lot of people that will argue this as well. Plays extremely well. Of course, you get past kind of the first 4 or 5 hours of hand-holding, and then it really opens up. A lot of games can be said about that, the same thing. But sorry, my mouth is full of M&Ms right now, so if I'm stuttering, it's because I'm trying to chew them at the same time.
We are such a goddamn Mickey Mouse operation.
We totally are.
The Frinky Dink fucking show.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know, it really is a fantastic game. Not the best Zelda game, though, and that's kind of sad because we really wanted this to be, but it's still a fucking phenomenal game. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a Wii game, but it still manages to be
playing Dolphin.
What's that? Yeah, well, even you know what? Beauty is also art direction.
It looks pretty good.
There's a lot more. There's art direction. There's camera angles and things that they do in Skyward Sword that are excellent. So it's not just graphics. You know, there's a lot more that to the look of a game than just Unreal Engine 3. So I think it's a worthy number 6. I don't think it should go any higher, and I'm glad it didn't. That's it.
Okay, number 5 was...
hold on. I just want to say one thing. I find it insulting that this game is on here instead of Dark Souls. That's all I'm going to say. Now you can go.
Well, we've all heard my thoughts on Dark Souls, though.
We've heard a lot of thoughts on Dark Souls.
And another game that has been talked to death by just about every video game writer on the planet is Bastion, our number 5 game. I have nothing new to add to the conversation, but I would like to state that the music is phenomenal. I have fallen asleep to the soundtrack several times. And
it just cradles you. his arms like a
baby. Is the soundtrack free, or you have to pay for it?
No. You have to pay for it, but it's like $8.
I'm buying it right now.
Yeah. So worth it.
Yeah, it is worth it. And like I said, everyone has talked Bastion to death. I don't know anything new that we could say about how much people like it and how good it is. As far as, you know, it's not exactly a Diablo clone, but for a Diablo clone, it's the one I like the most for not liking Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
So that says at least something. I didn't finish it, so I can't. Yeah. We spoke about it at length in past podcasts too. I'm not the best to speak about it, but I do know. It's our number five game. People like it.
Yep.
It's our number five game, and it deserves to be here. And if you want to know why, rewind this podcast about half an hour and go listen to why I said it was so great.
Number four is Skyrim, Elder Scrolls V.
And I don't care what anyone else thinks. I'm specifically saying not the PS3 version.
No, the PS3 version has no place on this list. PC and 360 only in this case. And I say that as a guy who really likes my PS3. This has nothing to do with console wars or anything shit like that. It's because Bethesda released a broken game on the PS3.
And that happened on all consoles, by the way. It's not just this game. It happens on a lot of
games. The PS3 version of this game is, by all accounts, mostly unplayable.
Yep.
And every time they've tried fixing it, they've broken it even worse. I recommend to everyone to buy this game next year in 2012 or 2013 when all the DLC comes out.
Yeah, and the Game of the Year edition.
$30.
Yeah.
So the reason that this didn't go higher on my list was because of the bugs. No matter what anybody says, I know the game is a huge ass game, but that should never be an excuse for making a product that's subpar.
Skyrim is not subpar.
No, it's not, I'm sorry. That's glitchy as fuck.
If a game is technically incompetent, which it is.
Well, it is subpar. I wouldn't call it technically incompetent.
Skyrim is the Titanic. It is big and beautiful and powerful and majestic and great, except it has a couple of really fucking fatal flaws that they put into the design because they were so busy
in the water in front of it.
No, I'm saying it didn't have enough lifeboats for everyone on board is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
And because they spent all the money fucking gilding it with gold and shit like that, like they didn't have enough time.
I'm not kidding. I am absolutely going to play this shit out of Skyrim.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
But it is going to be around July or August in a dead spot when they have more than likely ironed out most of the problems.
Mm.
So, I mean.
Yeah, no, but Skyrim is lovely.
It is.
It's a great game.
Except for the humans, the faces, which are just horrid.
Yeah, apparently it's better on PC. You can do some weird shit in the graphics.
You can clean the woman's faces.
What is that? What? No! I know we make jokes about racism on this podcast sometimes, right? But, like, this is a... The whole cleaning faces thing in Skyrim is a whole new weird, sort of weird fetishy level of oddness.
It's like the guy who jerks off to anime porn.
Also, there's a mod that makes everybody's eyes really big and wide and sparkly.
We've
done a random battle in Skyrim. It's the best playing game in the series. It is the best. It has the best main story in the series. It is the biggest, craziest game probably this year in just sheer terms of scale. And fighting dragons is still really cool. I mean,
okay.
Right?
Like, yeah, totally.
I think we did a random battle about this. If you want to go listen to it, go listen to the Skyrim random battle. We devoted an entire podcast to this, people. It's a great game. If you're listening to a video game podcast by SideQuest, you probably know why Skyrim is good by now.
Yep. So the only other reason that I didn't rate it higher was because I didn't play enough of it. And so I didn't feel like it was fair for me to rate it any higher. So that's all. But definitely a. I definitely know why people love this game. I mean, it really is. It's huge. You can do everything in this game. So, moving on.
The breadth of content looks great, but
yeah.
I one thing that just turns me off of a game, which will make me throw it on a shelf and never play it again, is losing a save or.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, just like the system locking up a couple times would aggravate me. So, like, I want to have the best experience possible. So, I'm going to put it off and play it, you know. And I hope I have fun with it. And by the way, this is the highest rated game that didn't get a single number one vote.
And that's true on our entire. Yep, didn't get a single number one. I think everybody's tastes are different enough that.
Was it 53 games you said?
Yep, but this was a constant. This showed up probably the most voted on, this and our eventual number one. So, number three, this was a surprise for a little bit, but then when you kind of think back at what the demographic is of side questing, where we have a few folks who do play a lot of Nintendo games.
Yeah, which is, as an outlet, we probably have the most writers that have a 3DS.
Yeah, exactly, out of any.
which is strange.
That is such a weird thing. Right?
Yeah, we don't get paid for this, yet we have the systems.
Yep.
Okay, whatever.
Well, I think
the weirdest, like most junky of the systems.
We do have a really great makeup to this, a group to the site of a cross section of gamers. So we definitely get. Kind of everybody's opinion, but Mario 3D Land. This is
Super Mario 3D Land.
Sorry, Super Mario 3D Land. This is the best Mario since Super Mario 64, in my opinion. It is better than Mario.
Even better than Galaxy and Galaxy 2.
I think so, because this is just purely designed on classic Mario. This is very core Mario, especially when you get to the second half of the game, which becomes, in some respects, completely brutal and difficult and insane, like Dark Souls, I guess. But
I have not gotten to that second half of the game, but it harkens back to another bit of that weirdness of that we're talking about with Skyward Sword, where it's just like, why do we need to spend like an entire game? I get, okay, Nintendo, that you're trying to reach to a broader audience and stuff like that, but like. There's got to be a better way of designing games for a wide audience than just, you know, to have 8 hours of your game be designed for children and then the next, 80% of the game be the good part. Like,
well,
I don't get that.
I don't think that's necessarily the case with 3D Land. I definitely see that with Zelda, but with 3D Land, those first eight stages, we'll call them the regular stages, are really well done. I mean, they really are some of the best platforming stages in any Mario game ever.
I find them banal because they're just so simplistic.
Well, they are simplistic, but I don't think that makes them bad. I think that makes them accessible, but not childish. I really do think that the mechanics of the stages work really well. The one thing that is missing, of course, is I'm not a huge fan of some of the power-ups, and there's a little bit of repetition in stage design, but which is probably why the game didn't rank any higher in the list. But
fucking like decades, people are clamoring for the goddamn Tanuki suit, and it comes out. Dali Dvordomovsky quotes, "I don't really care for the power-ups."
Well, what I meant to say was that the power-ups aren't what they could have been. They should have been that awesome Tanuki suit, but that wouldn't have. The only problem is that wouldn't have worked well with the game mechanic. They should have maybe even just made it a completely different suit from the ground up. But for this game, but those
they certainly did not. This whole game is Tanuki suit. It's just like, you want Tanuki suit?
True.
Here's your goddamn Tanuki suit.
it's like everybody.
Their solution to fixing the Tanuki suit issue was just give everything in the game a Tanuki suit, which I kind of find funny.
Tanuki suits for everybody. 3D Tanuki suits. Nintendo does tend to do this a lot, where they don't open up stuff till it's too late in the game for some people, but. It's you know, when you do get to that second half, or after you beat kind of the main quest of the game, and these other levels open up, the social aspect of the game really becomes awesome, because then you start to compare, level times, how fast did you complete a level. It shows up in your friends' leaderboards and things like that, which I think is fantastic, because then you're always comparing to who has the highest, the fastest speed on any specific level. And it comes through Street Pass as well. So if you're passing somebody in a gaming convention and they somehow got through the first level in, 25 seconds and it's taking you a minute and a half, then you're going to be maybe apt to go back and try to beat that. But
fantastic. I don't deny that it's not a great Mario game, but I just sure. take issue with that weird sort of design philosophy behind
sure.
it. I actually find the game is delightful. Mm-hmm. Like it is so plur. You know?
Well, I think it was I think it was the perfect palate cleanser to some of the other games which were super serious narratives.
This game pretty much saved the 3DS.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Between the price drop and this game hitting not long after, people were finally seeing a reason to, pick up a system, and it's done gangbusters, and it will continue to do gangbusters until Luigi's Mansion comes out.
Mm-hmm. So it's Mario 3D Land.
Even then, it'll continue to do gangbusters. You know?
Yes. More than likely.
It's Mario 3D Land. It's murdering Vita in Japan, and it'll probably continue to do so in the U.S. So,
we'll see how that goes.
Number two.
Japanese pricing,
yeah.
And next up, the side questing game of the year, Saints Row the Third.
We decided to do only nine games this year.
Nine
on
games
on our top 10 list. Number two and number one go to Saints Row the Third.
Yep. Amazing! Amazing.
So, yeah, our number two game.
Big-ass chains.
Our number two game of the year is Saints Row the Third. Once again, it's another game that has been talked to death. But we all played
Saints Row. Number two on our list, right? Number one in our hearts. I beat it,
Saints Row the Third is my favorite game of the year. Dally is
Nope. Continue.
Dally's dead. He basically fell over and he's in a ditch now. We all played Saints Row Third, though, right?
Yeah. I did play it. I beat it. How far are you in it, Eric?
I'm done with that bitch. I have to go back. I saw that. I have to go back and clean up some achievements and whatnot, which I am happy to do because I've already done all the collections. I collected everything.
I mean, my love for this game can be summed up in three words, and those words are, but fucking Reynolds? English dude meeting Mayor Burt Reynolds of Crazy Town, USA.
I played as the woman number one.
Woman
and that
one,
voice,
okay.
So, in a similar way to,
oh my god,
Mass Effect 2.
I feel like the
what? In a similar way,
just,
to Mass Effect.
No, sorry, I just feel like that.
What? God, quit talking! Quit stopping! you always stop talking after 3 seconds.
I was just saying, I think it's.
Dude,
Steven, your computer is out of sync, Steven.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. I was just going to say that I find it amazing. I think it would be even more amazing to hear the woman voice, just fucking idolizing Burt Reynolds. I hadn't even thought of that until you brought that up. I just feel that's amazing.
It's just whenever I hear other people talking about their Saints Row character, it's the same way as Mass Effect 2, where I can't do that. Where the character is so much my own that whenever I hear someone else's, it completely throws me off. So, and as far as story goes, it's a Saints Row game, So who really cares?
It's so much more than a Saints Row.
It's not the story. It's the writing and the situations, like the situational awareness, the world awareness that it has. Saints Row the Third
by Hulk Hogan is of his entire career.
Oh my God! It's like until about the third mission with Angel. I didn't even realize it was Hulk Hogan. I'm like, hang on a second. That is Hulk Hogan. That is Hulk motherfucking Hogan. That is Hollywood Hogan. And he's raining shit down on this game. It's amazing.
I did not know that was the Suburban Commando until somebody told me. somebody had to tell me.
The game is just – it's just completely fun. It's just completely bonkers fun. Another one of those palate-cleansing games that goes really well with like a Skyrim or a Batman or a Witcher or Deus Ex.
It's the most video game mm-hmm. I've played in a long
time.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I described it to a friend of mine once. As I said, basically, the way that the game plays and is presented is almost like it's like these people. It's not like the characters are in a video game or know that they're in a video game. It's like people from the real world got transported into a video game, are completely aware that it's a video game, and are acting in every way like it is a video game, except for actually saying out loud that it is a video game and having as
this
much fun
with it. This is the Emilio Estevez in Nightmares of Video Games.
I was thinking Dungeons & Dragons, the animated series.
Same thing. But it's just, you know, sure, like, and it's hilarious. Is completely hilarious. Of our three games that are on our top 10 list that are funny, this is the second one. And the commitment to the humor. Yeah, it's not like, just the ha-ha 3-foot dildo bat. Like, sure, it was funny for the first time, but like just the constant jokes. Like, you're escaping from a mansion being towed by a gimp, and you shoot other gimp-drawn carriages, and they blow up.
And they explode, yes. Yeah. And I think Giant Bomb, or it was either Giant Bomb or it was Joystick, said that it was like that, how that probably started is they just realized that all the vehicles explode when you shoot them enough, and then they saw that and realized that, oh shit, no, keep that in the game.
Yes, exactly. And like this,
and the game is littered with shit like that.
And there's open world jank as an open world game is wont to do.
Sure.
But it fits in. I drove up to one of my houses to go upstairs, and I didn't get out first, so I just hit the button, and I warped my entire car up to my penthouse suite, and I was driving around inside.
Oh, this game. Oh, Saints Row. On top of all this, it's just a competent, like, shooter. It plays better than a Grand Theft Auto or... That's right.
Yeah,
I said competent.
Yeah, it's only competent though. It's not fun until you get to upgrade your weapons.
Mm. But you can upgrade them at any time, which is a great idea.
When you get your max level pistols and you're literally punching them through the air, it's tons of fun. Mm-hmm. And not to mention, like, you got your Atari combat tanks and
the Warzone tank. Yeah.
HTTP://Deckers.die
is maybe my favorite mission in any game that has a mission, like in a video game.
You are playing a video game and you get transported into a video game in the video game, and
in this video game that already is self-aware that it is a video game.
And not only do you run around with a Mega Man-style
Buster cannon,
but you can run around as a sex doll with a Buster, or a toilet with a Buster.
With a Buster cannon.
Exactly. It's the greatest thing. And while the whole time the game inside the game is simulating lag...
latency spikes.
Yeah,
like latency spikes, like your connection just went to shit and whatnot. And like you're playing an MMO online, so you're jumping around the game and whatnot, telling you that is exactly what is happening to you while you're playing it. And
all of this said, it is a fantastic game. Saying more, like, we've already said too much about the game.
I feel like it's been out long enough where if you haven't played it, I don't care about you enough to care about your feelings on whether or not this game is ruined for you, because you should have played it by now, goddammit.
To be fair, they criminalized this game with its release date. It really should have been a mid-October game, or even earlier than that. But
you know, the nice thing about it is it's definitely still picking up steam with people buying it. I mean,
yeah, it has great.
It's gonna have a long tail. It's gonna have a long tail.
Yeah, oh. It's one of the few games where almost everyone. I haven't heard anything negative about the game. I haven't heard anyone say I like Saints Row 2, but I don't like Saints Row 3.
Yeah. One thing I will say without trying to spoil it for anybody is if you get Saints Row, find a friend who has Saints Row as well and play in their world with them. Have them drive a car and then stand on top of that car and see what happens.
Or even better, a jet.
Or a jet, yes.
On a VTOL jet.
No, you can't. Oh. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you can. But like Tony Hawk Pro Skater style.
Exactly. Oh my god. We're doing okay. That's Saints Row 3, our number two game of the year. My number one. That said, I don't disagree with our number one game, Barbie Horse Adventures 2.
And there was the way you could stroke the horse's mane really was something that
fantastic.
It was a tight race.
Mm-hmm. The unicorn.
Oh, get a tight race with horses, yeah.
but really,
the texturing on Barbie.
See, okay, the joke is run its course.
Yeah, it really is Zelda Skyward Sword again. Yep, that's our number one game, Skyward.
So our number one game, which I think got tied with Saints Row 3 for the most number one votes, but edged it in second place votes. Portal 2. That was my number two game.
Yep,
I'm okay with seeing it at number one. For our
it site. Was almost everybody list. Had it ranked except for Steven.
Steven.
I didn't have it on my list.
You
Steven was the one.
You, Ryan, and Aaron were like the only people.
No, Ryan had it. Patrick.
Oh, that's right. Patrick.
If Portal 2 was not on my list, it was an accident. But clearly it doesn't matter because it is our number one game of the year.
Yeah, you don't have it on there, dude.
Yeah.
Steven doesn't have it on there.
You have Super Brothers and Orcs Must Die rated above Portal 2.
Portal 2 was an oversight, but again, it doesn't make any fucking difference.
Yeah. It was handily our game of the year by about 20 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the equivalent of two people picking it as their number one game of the year, which on our list would have been an achievement of it on its own.
Exactly. It would, yeah, definitely. I wrote up the summary on it, but really the best way to summarize it is just to say Wheatley, who's done so well by.
I think it's more than Wheatley.
Well, no, it is more than Wheatley, but when you look at like the rise of Wheatley,
the arc to that character is phenomenal.
It's a phenomenal arc, and then you tie in the new puzzle mechanics, which are
bouncy gel, slidey gel.
I mean, I went and tried to play Portal 1. I couldn't do it because I was ruined by Portal 2 playing with the new mechanics. I wanted to bounce off the walls and try.
There you have it, kids.
Yep.
Portal 2 will ruin you, and you will bounce off the walls.
I think in every way this game is better than the original Portal.
Yeah.
And the only people like who seem to think otherwise are the it's not original anymore people.
And Steven Strom, who didn't vote for it.
Yep.
Yeah, clearly. Well, you see, I did voice the character of Wheatley, so I felt it would have been a conflict of interest. Well, it's not really a problem. You see, we've got to hack this door, and if you don't, I'll just pop around and have a conversation with him if you don't mind.
Well done.
And we can't spoil the ending because that'd be downright rude. But
I don't want to spoil anything about this game. That like
the ending of Portal 2 is probably my favorite ending in a video game.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun ending, definitely.
It also has a very phenomenal Nolan North Nolan North appearance, too, actually, since we mentioned it earlier.
As the busted cubes.
Yeah, as all the of the personality spheres.
Yeah, and
is he,
the
is he really?
Yeah, and he's the dysfunctional turrets.
Yeah, yeah, he is like everything in that game except for the like the primary character.
Yes.
And he didn't even know he was in it until the game came out. Hmm. he voiced it for some mystery game, and then people started congratulating
like
him on a
ago,
job
right?
well done. Yeah, like 2 years ago before it was even announced, and then people started giving him congratulations on all that good work in Portal 2, and he's like, what? Because nobody had ever told him he was in Portal 2. which is a great film.
Once again, a game has... It's gotten not... Actually, you know what? I think Portal 2 has been overlooked by a lot of people this year.
It came out so early in the year.
That's not an excuse. Not a year after Mass Effect came out, like the first goddamn week of the year, and everyone gave it the
Actually,
game of the year. And I don't know what it was, but people... It
well,
wasn't
Mass Effect had the advantage of having like monthly-ass DLC coming in to mm-hmm. keep it in people's minds.
Whereas yeah, I guess.
Portal 2 did have DLC, but it was not nearly as much, and it was the co-op
and
stuff.
I picked it as my number two game based on the single player only. I still haven't made it around to the co-op.
We should play some co-op.
Well, I at this point, I still want to play it, but I want to play it with another co-op virgin.
Have you played the co-op?
Not yet. I still want to.
But I have it on PC
want to
and PS3.
What about you? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Same yeah, here, actually. So I can't play with either of you guys, because you guys have to play with each other. Go play
no,
with
I have
each
a,
other.
I have it on 360.
Oh, well, then you're dumb.
What the?
Well, if you got it on PS3, you got a PC copy. And if you got it on PC, you got the PC copy, which, as we know, is the best version. It's a Valve game.
Well, right. No, Daly got the PS3 version, but if everyone remembers, that was the week that PSN went down.
And I couldn't wait.
And he had to return the game, which was a good decision, not waiting, because it would have been a month before he'd gotten to play the game.
Wait, no, because the PS3 version comes with a voucher for the PC version. You have a computer
yeah, it came with a voucher for the Steam version, and you couldn't tie your accounts together.
Do it.
Yes,
that's
I'm,
right! I forgot about that. I got mine in just under the wire, so I managed to get mine
before.
On there.
Yep.
Yeah, hours same here. I remember talking to him about this.
Yep.
And now he's just like, I'm gonna fucking find you guys.
It was a hilarious thing. And Portal 2, I don't know how to keep saying it. The storyline, the arc of all of the characters, the GLaDOS moments, a character I almost thought was overused in the original Portal because the jokes kept coming in the same way. In this game, it's even more fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks phenomenal.
Yeah. The way that, like, the weird sort of arc between the two characters, how they mirror each other, but in, like, they're contrapositives. So you have, like, GLaDOS is even more vicious than she was in the first game. And you've got Wheatley, who is so sweet and kind. And then, them both going up in that weird bell curve of character development, and then, like, going right back down to where they were towards the beginning. It's so strange, but it is so great, and not only is it just a great video game story and a big great video game arc, but it is just a great, in general, in all media. Yep. It is
and
fantastic.
The comedy is fantastic. The moment that Wheatley discovers that he has to keep doing puzzles to give him the satisfaction, and then he creates
and that satisfaction.
The same, and he doesn't get any satisfaction out of it. It's hilarious.
Or and that the satisfaction will slowly gets like less and less and less and less for him. So
he's trying to make
it, like
he's making the simplest puzzles possible because he can't figure out the complex ones.
He's chasing the puzzle dragon, but he's too dumb to do it.
Chasing the Puzzle Dragon.
Is such a fantastic game. And with the rest of the games on this list, you should have played it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, like we said earlier, it was just such a fantastic year for games that if you touched any of the games on this list, you probably had a great time. You can't go wrong. And with all the awesome deals and sales that are going on, You'll be able to pick all these up this entire year for good prices. So,
before we finish up this podcast mm-hmm. with our game of the year, one game that didn't make the top 10, what would you pick as your favorite?
That was precisely what I was about to ask.
Ooh, good,
yeah.
Good call. Good call.
What was your best of the rest?
Mine or Steven or yours?
Both of you.
I want to hear yours first, Ellie. I know what mine is already.
You can get it out of the way quickly, I guess.
Okay. I'm going to say that the game that I would have loved to see on the list that didn't make the list, was Bulletstorm.
I agree. That was my number three game of the year.
It was fantastic. Like it was in my bottom five, but it was a really fun.
Innovative shooter,
really cool. It borrowed elements from a lot of different games, but it did it really well. It just never got that following that it could have, I think. And
the advertising for that initially, game kind of hurt that
yeah, it sold well initially, and the advertising with they're taking a tax at every game,
yeah.
And as a new IP, you can't be doing that really. And it did a few things to hurt itself, but. Not having a lasting multiplayer.
Yep.
The level design was some of the best I've seen, the first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. And the mechanics
the giant robot. Great. The giant remote-controlled robot dragon.
Cool. Oh, God. What was his name? That was a hilarious moment.
Yeah.
Once again.
Mr. Snuggleworth, Esquire, some shit.
Another game that pulled off its comedy really well, and it wasn't nearly as hyper quote-unquote as the advertising portrayed it to be, which helped it out. It wasn't dick tits.
Yet another game this year that proves that raunchy kind of more adulty Mike Judgey here can work, further pushing Duke Nukem Forever down the hole of mediocrity.
Oh, yeah. What about you, Steven?
Very, very, very easily Dark Souls. Souls is my number two game.
Yeah.
Souls is... It's fabulous. It's just an amazing game. It is a game I will continue to play for the rest of my life, I feel, unless there's another game in its vein that comes along that kind of usurps its role. But the way that the game treats you as a player and the agency it gives you, mixed with all of the crazy secrets and the way that you have to figure everything out in that game, and just the perfection of that level design. There is not a single map in that entire game, and yet I never, ever, ever got lost. It was insane, and I never even thought about it until somebody mentioned it to me that happened. And the way that the game feels in my hand is just so good. Oh, it's just so good in my hand. Hail to the king, baby. Dark Souls, the king. Yeah, it is. I'm really ashamed it did not get on this list, but not enough. I mean, it is intimidating as hell. I get it.
It was just too big for me. On top of issues I saw with it to begin with, I didn't really attach myself to the first game very much, so I wasn't really
going
to do a sequel.
I never beat the first boss of Demon's Souls.
If there's ever a free period, I might pick it up or something for $30. But sure. I don't know.
If Demon's Souls is any indication, you will be able to get it pretty cheap down the line.
Yep.
Yeah, probably. And since Daly said Bulletstorm, my best of the rest is going to be Driver San Francisco.
Oh, cool.
That was my number four game.
Coma Lightning Fight, right?
There's so much fantastic shit about Driver San Francisco that nobody got to see because it was a driver game.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell
coming
me
off
not
of parallel either. Lines in Driver 2.
Yes, exactly. And Driver 2 wasn't even that great. So yeah.
Driver 2 wasn't that great, but Driver 3 was a big fuck you.
I picked up this game solely for the multiplayer because I had a chance to, I guess it was stand up with it at E3. Alexander Solinsky and I over at Joystick played it an hour each at E3, the multiplayer, because it was so much fun. And I got it just for that. I popped open the single player, and I don't know how long it was, maybe 15 hours. I have no, I honestly have no idea, but I beat it in 2 days, the single player. And the story is so over the top, fantastic, and insane. I like insanity, and Driver San Francisco has that in spades.
Not only that, but then it like kind of ties everything together in a believable way in the end, doesn't it? For the most part,
theoretically, yeah.
In a pretty legitimate way.
In a game where you only get to drive around, it does some fantastic things with the jump mechanic, where you pull yourself out of the car and jump into any other vehicle. And there's
Except
a mission.
You will only jump into one other vehicle, which is the DeLorean from Back to the Future. Because
oh my god!
The only
and then
vehicle.
You can go 88 miles an hour, and you will go back in time.
That is like, I love so you trying to like think of this game and just not having the words.
Like another amazing thing. Like it's a driving game. You only play as a car, but one of the things you have to do is. You take over the body, which is what you do when you do your shift mechanic. You take over the body of a driver, and you have to pretend that you didn't, but you're chasing your own vehicle, which you have to control. So you have to control the vehicle that you're actually driving and the vehicle that you shifted out of. So you're chasing your goddamn self. And you have to make it look like a real chase scene. Come on,
everything about
play
it.
This game.
I need to get it. I really, really badly need to get it.
It is worth any amount of money you have to spend to get it.
Oh, shit. I think the thing that keeps me away from it is just because I'm not a driving game fan, just period. But I think I will break my moratorium on it. Just for
open world insanity simulator.
It's a nice way to put it, actually.
Coma madness. Coma madness.
Well, our open world podcast insanity simulator has come to an end.
I'm going
to
mention one more game because nobody else knows NBA 2K12.
Yeah, that was a really good game. The NBA 2K games are really good.
It's a sports game, but sports games aren't real games. The tra-la-la.
Blah, 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 blah. But it's a good game. It's a great game.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. We did it 3 hours later.
That's literally 3 hours later.
We put a cap on 2011.
Yeah, that's
it. We ended it.
Our next podcast 2011
is
much better. Trust me.
Yeah, but this was the
this
end
was
of
needed.
2011
this was needed.
Podcast.
This is needed.
Propaganda. We needed to put a cap on this crazy, crazy goddamn year.
What a crazy year
where everybody
was.
Where everybody played games that they hated but loved them and. We had Saints Row the Third, and like franchises rose and fell in the blink of an eye. And this was 2011 was madness. Dalibor Domovsky is a dick,
a 3D dick.
A 3D dick with splooge on the screen.
Just wait till you get your your swap note loaded up. Steven, where can we find you?
You can find me on sidequesting.com. I'm also found on Twitter at Steven Strum. That's Steven with a V, and Strum spelled S-T-R-O-M.
Eric?
And I did some writing for Joystick once, or twice, a couple times, if you want to go look at that. What about you, Eric?
You can find me at LMM on Twitter. That's two L's and an M at the end. And I guess on sidequesting once in a while. Cool. Once in a while.
Yeah, when he decides to write.
Hey, I have literally 30 stories ready to go. I just need to write them.
Okay. Dally, where can we find you?
I am Dally Domofsky. You can find me at Cool Rats on the old Twitters. We'll link it up in the show notes. This has been... Like we always do. Episode 321. Thank you, guys. Thank you, America. Happy New Year.
Bye.
Steven? Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye, 2011. And
Steven?
A hearty...